All right, hello and welcome, everybody. You are about to start listening to episode 7 of Garage Hammer.
Yay.
I'm Dave Wojtek, and with me, as always, is Christopher.
Chris Barnett. Hi, guys.
If you're listening to the episode and you're hearing this, it's because, we recorded it a few days back, and we said on the recording that we were going to announce the contest during the next episode. But then we realized it was only a few days before the contest ended, and we didn't want to wait. So we held off putting out the episode for a couple of days until it was actually supposed to
come out.
Yeah, we sat on it so that we could announce the contest winner. So episode's about to start, and then later on in the episode, during one of the commercial breaks near the end of the episode, we will announce the contest winner. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Garage Hammer, and we'll be back with you in a few minutes.
Oi! Snorri, what are you doing? Well, get the equipment. The Manlings are going to report on their tournament. Yeah, they played. Well, I tell you, if the fat one didn't win with the dwarves, I don't want to listen anyway. Oh, I will listen because they're funny. Funny looking. don't roll your eyes at me, you git. What do you know from funny? Shut your gob and get the equipment. And the rest of you lot, shut it. I'm listening to me show.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Garage Hammer with your hosts, David Wojtek and Christopher Barnett. On today's episode, tournament reviews, painting chaos dwarves, deployment, and two very special guest hosts, Chris Yu and Grant Fetter. So without any further ado, please welcome your hosts, David Wojtek and Christopher Barnett.
All right, welcome, welcome. We're here for another episode of Garage Hammer. We're finally back from our tournament. Dave, welcome.
Hey, thanks. Hi, everybody. I'm here. Skip Stevenson.
We are here joined with two special guests, introducing Chris Yu.
Hello, everyone.
And Grant Fetter.
Hey.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Pretty good. How about you guys?
Very good, Dave.
Awesome.
I'm doing fantastic.
All right, let's get into it. Before we get too far into it, we should definitely tip our hat to our sponsor and advertiser, Unique Gifts and Games. They are found in Grays Lake, Illinois, for your Warhammer, Warhammer 40K, War Machine, Magic the Gathering, Fantasy Flight, board games, miniatures, and everything in between.
Zombie Dice.
And Zombie Dice.
I like that game.
I've never played it. Is it good?
It's super easy and it's fun as heck.
Well, I like easy and fun as heck. But you can find them online at www.uniquegg.com. That's UNIQUEGG.com. And as soon as I get it on my telephone, well, I'll give you a phone number.
588-2300.
Empire. Oh, it's 847-548-8270. Unique Gifts and Games. Check them out today.
Okay, and outside of our show sponsor, we have an individual shout-out sponsor. We have our second sponsorship from Drake Pendragon.
Thank you very much, Drake.
Drake, that's not his real name, but Drake is on our forums, and that's what he sends it to us as. He's our friend from Norway.
That's right.
And we are going to get to his shout-out later in the show because he actually paid in because he wants Harrison to do his shout-out.
That's right. He's got a special request.
And then after talking with him, we actually went far bigger than the original request. We're doing something really stupid.
Go big or go home, right?
Go big or go home. Got to bet heavy to win heavy. So we're going to be doing that during the segment for the Phoenix Prince. And so we will get to that a little bit later. So let's get to our first segment of our show.
Fantabulous. The first segment
The manager, MGR. What have you guys done in modeling this week? Grant, you done any modeling?
Well, I'm always doing a little bit of modeling, it feels like. Sometimes, the wife is not too keen on it. But I always try to sneak downstairs and, get some models painted. I haven't really been doing a whole lot of modeling. I've been really excited about my new Skaven army that I picked up, which was pretty much all painted already, which is very odd for me to do something like that because I enjoy the hobby so much. But,
Let's tell this story. This is one of those, this story should be told. At Unique Gifts and Games, there has been for a few months now a Skaven army of a couple thousand points sitting in their display case.
There was a consignment Skaven army, yep.
And it was, what is it? I think it was like
they were asking like $500, I think, for it. It was nicely painted too. I mean,
it's unusual because there's at least four different regiments of clan rats, and each one almost looks like they're painted in chaos colors.
Yeah, right? They each had their own color. One was purplish, one was green.
It's like the Skittles of this.
Every
game,
time we came in, Harrison would sit and look at it. I would sit and look at it. We kind of drool over it, and. Grant came in, and Grant really liked that army.
I just liked it. You know, I play Warriors of Chaos, and Skaven back in the day. I've been playing for quite a while, and Skaven always interested me. They shoot. They used to beat up on me quite readily when I played Orcs and Goblins, and so they, you know, it always intrigued me. So I said, ooh, you know, an army, and I, you know, how can I get the wife to let me spend $500 on a new army? And, yeah.
So. And then, sadly, I'm looking at the forums,
mm-hmm.
and Christopher had a post on our forums.
By the way,
GarageHammer.net, come and join the forums.
I just want to point out that at no point on the forum did I ever lie. I said, uh-oh, Grant's future Skaven army was just bought out. Did I not?
Yes, you did.
Somebody bought
Grant's
Future Skaven army.
Oh my gosh, I was so, you know, I was actually, you know, just kind of like a little kid. My head was down, and oh, somebody bought it. Oh man!
Turns out that somebody was his wife.
Yeah, it was my wife, and she saw me pouting around. She's like, "Oh, what's the matter?" And I said, "Oh, well, Chris, Chris said on the forum that somebody bought the army that I really wanted," and she was like, "Oh, that's not the Chris guy from the podcast, is it?" I was like, yeah, why? She said, oh, well, I met him at the store when I was buying the army for you. And I'm like, what? And so I have this army bought and paid for by my wife, actually.
Is it your birthday?
So coolest. No.
Is it
nothing,
Christmas?
Nothing.
Okay, so
she said
basically.
Kind of early Christmas present.
Oh, she, you know, I don't
whatever.
Know.
Whatever.
What was the final count and how many Skaven you have?
321 Skaven for, yeah. I mean, I won't even say how much the final price was, but it was.
It's not even a point.
Steal.
It's a steal.
It's a great price.
And plus, yeah, built, painted well. Mm-hmm. I mean, so often you buy stuff from someone, like you get something on eBay, or like I said, when I bought my Orc and Goblin army, and RJ listens to the show, so no offense, RJ, but like some of the banners and stuff, they were, you know, those are his early paintings, and you got to strip them and clean them and redo them, and that thing doesn't need any work, man. That's
well, and I should, you know, I'll probably do some touch-ups and things on it, because at heart, you know, I am a gamer, just like Chris is. I'm very much a gamer, but the hobby is very strong in my heart. I worked for Games Workshop for a while.
That's right.
I have a strong foundation in the hobby. And to have it already painted, I kind of feel like I'm cheating. But
you kind of want to make it yours a little
bit,
maybe.
Yeah, I got to make it mine a little bit.
I can respect that.
But I'm just saying, it is ready to play, though. And
Well, do you need to add something to it on the hobby side? I mean, do you feel as though there's something...
I can add... missing... there's no rat ogres. There's no plague claw catapults, which is something I want to add. There was another big miss. Oh, warp lightning cannon. Didn't have any warp lightning cannons, which seems like every Skaven army I've ever seen has a warp lightning cannon.
Are they strictly
necessary? Yes, we don't have one yet.
I don't think so from everything that I've read.
They seem a little strange to use.
I mean, they're kind of like a cannon, and I'm still getting used to the book, so I can't quote. I mean, they operate kind of like a cannon.
Yeah, Skaven's like a madcap Empire army in a way.
Kind of, yeah. Really shooty, and can go wrong. Right?
They're the mad scientist.
But when it
army.
Goes right, it hits hard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, strength 10. Yeah.
They're like the orcs if the orcs were smart. They really are, because it...
Well, in terms of diversity, I would agree with you.
Orcs and goblins, they've got all sorts of weird stuff on it. And if it goes well, you smash. A lot of times, they just wind up beating up each other.
Well, rather than worry about animosity, you just have to worry about a crummy leadership, though.
Crummy leadership, or the fact that they're completely insane mad scientists.
Or they blow themselves up.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the mad scientist party.
I think they're a little bit more reliable than the orcs and goblins in that aspect, because the army is kind of built around knowing that they're going to die. I mean, you've got all these two-point models. And yes, you've got the goblins in... in the Orcs and Goblins to fill that, but pretty much every model in that army is 2 points, 5 points. You know, you don't really have a lot of elite troops that are going to, you know, crush you if they die or don't do something.
Do they still have the rule, life is cheap?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Which one is life is cheap? Is that the one that says you can shoot into them?
Yes.
That's only for Skaven slaves now, right?
I think so. It might be for clan rats also.
We'll have to look
that
up. I know the Skaven slaves only are the only things that don't affect you if they're running.
Okay.
Now. So if regular clan rats are running, they're, you know, anybody can panic. But if the slaves are running, nobody panics.
So what else? Have you built anything else?
That's it. Not this week. I got a great deal. I'm working on a manticore. I got one of the old...
the Dark Elf Manticore?
No, the Necromancer, the really old one, the kind of cheesy cartoony Manticore. But I got one of those for just dirt cheap, and I'm mounting my Chaos Lord on that, so I'm working on it too.
What about you, Chris?
Nothing to the scale that Grant has been working on. Actually, I'm preparing for Core Comp coming up here in the first weekend of October.
Mm-hmm.
Just putting together some Orc and Goblin artillery pieces and some odds and ends. Most of my army is painted, so... just filling in gaps here and there.
But you're going to go Orcs and Goblins for Core Comp. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Folks, in case you don't know what Core Comp is, that is a tournament. It's actually one of the friendliest tournaments around here in Illinois. It's at this moment, it's 2,400 points. It's going to be in early October in, I believe, Downers Grove, Illinois. And the point is, bring a fluffy list. So at least 900 points has to be strictly core. So for
it was 40%, but then they bumped it up from 2,250 to 2,400, and they said you could still keep it at 900 points of core. But, yeah, it's cool. You got to bring in... I mean, I know you hear... I know I've heard on other podcasts where they're like, when that guy hands me a list and he's got all of his characters named and a little story, I rub my hands together going, I'm going to wipe this guy out. That's the rules in this new tournament. You have to have names and a little bit of fluff story behind your army, which I think is cool. And I'm 90% certain I'm bringing my dwarfs.
Yeah, it sounds like a tournament that I should be a part of. People who want to play for fun. So
yeah, if you're going to go to a 2-day tournament, this one should be your first because it's a great introduction into the tournament scene.
Well, I'm going to try and make it. I'm excited because
I know Joe and Chuck are going to be there from the Wodcast.
They're going to be there. I'm going to try and be there. I'm going to try and bring my Chaos Dwarves if I can. I'm going to try and get determination on which list is going to be legal for the tournament and bring that. But so other than building a couple of bits and bobs, as they would say, for your Orcs and Goblins, anything else?
No, that's it.
That's it?
Yep.
Dave, how about yourself?
Well, I finally... we had that tournament last week, and so I got my War Machines painted. I got the crews painted. I got my Lord with Shield Bearers painted. And I think that was about it. Other than that, what have I been doing? Building Skaven. Because Harrison was painting his Phoenix, and Harrison had a really neat paint scheme. He's not down here now, folks, but he'll be here later with the Phoenix Prince segment. He went and painted his Phoenix Guard with red, and then he used like that flaming orange for highlights because he wanted them to look like they were on fire. And granted, he's a 9.5-year-old painter. There's some gaps and some spots, you know. He's learning. But I thought it was, I mean, I've seen a lot worse. I thought it was a pretty interesting. He refused to go to this tournament without his army being painted.
Really impressed with that. I played him earlier in the week, and he kicked my butt, and he had a mostly unpainted army and showed up to the tournament with a painted army. Hats off to that. That's awesome.
Well, when Chris and
it's better than I can do.
When Chris and I, here's the thing. When Chris and I recorded the last show, I had said, I am not going to that tournament. Somebody from this show is going to have a fully painted army at that tournament. And Harrison heard that and took it to heart. And he spent every day for the rest of the week, at least a couple hours in his room, painting, painting, painting. He painted all of his cavalry, all of the cavalry. He painted his general. He painted all those, finished all the spearmen that he added. And then he did all the Phoenix. I mean, he really... he cranked it out. I was proud of him.
There's nothing better than having two fully painted armies on the battlefield to look at. Because it's a cinematic experience.
It's spectacular. It makes it feel almost like a role-playing experience at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is. It's so much better. It's when you've got them all painted. And so it was a lot of fun. And he did a really great job. So I finished that. And like I said, I've been building Skaven. And I had like three big battalion boxes of sprues. And I just... got sick of it, and I sat down one night and cut everything up and sorted them into the bits boxes because I had to make room. Those sprues were everywhere.
I need to do the same one of these days. You got a pretty good organization going with your boxes.
Well, my wife does scrapbooking and makes jewelry, so we were over at Hobby Lobby picking up jewelry stuff for her, and they got those little bead boxes, and I bought like 10 of them, and I just went by model type and went, and so I have like really, that's my OCD showing again, but I have really organized bits boxes. But the beauty of it is when I do that is I know I've got like 20 extra sets of arms and 20 extra sets of legs and 800 extra heads. So I'll go on like eBay to like Hordo Bits. So we'll give a shout out to that guy. and just buy the torsos, you know. And I mean, I've got, you know, I've gone to him because he's got a bits sale thing on eBay where he does auctions and buy it nows. And any plastic set that you could get from Games Workshop, he pretty much has the bits separated.
Does he have metal ones as well?
He might sell some metals, but that's not bit stuff.
That's not really his. Okay.
Well, because that doesn't really come into breakdown as bits very well.
I'm looking for old bits, but that's a different story.
I don't think he has them.
Yeah.
But the plastics. So what I'll do is that's how I have so many dryads. Is I had all these extra arms and back, so I just went and won a bunch of auctions for the bodies, and just went through all my bits and just made a ton more because they give you so much extra.
Yeah.
There's always that one part that you only get just enough of.
Usually the body or the legs.
Yeah,
or something.
So I just bought a bunch of dwarf bodies and used all my extra arms and legs and stuff. So that arms and legs. So that's what I did. Well, for gaming we had the tournament, which we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
And reading, I'm still reading the second Nagash book, and I just started it, so I got nothing. Anybody else do any reading? Like anything good, fantasy, sci-fi?
No, I haven't done any reading. I've done plenty of painting. That's what I've been focusing on mostly.
Well, tell them, what have you built?
I will tell you. It's Chaos Dwarves, my friend. Wouldn't be a show if I didn't talk about the big hats.
Oh, it is the big hats.
Oh, it's the big hats. Mostly,
he loves the big hats.
I started back in about 95, and at that point it was already 4th edition. And, you know, those are the blisters for sale. So mostly big hats. I've had to use a lot of conversions from the old Chernobyl line.
Sure.
I've got these big blocky-looking dwarves I'll have to use for what are known as Obsidian Guard in the GT Indie book.
Mm.
So I'm just painting like crazy. I love them. They make me happy. I can't wait to get the whole thing done. My goal is to have an army painted for Core Comp. I'm going
to
try and go.
Cool.
So this will be my second tournament.
Looking
and hopefully I'll play smarter.
But don't worry, folks. We're not going to become an all-tournament. We're not going to become an all-tournament show. We're still keeping the focus where it's supposed to be.
Oh, I play for fun. If it's not fun, I'm not going to go to a tournament. But this one is right up my alley. Plus, people I like are going to go, so I want to go.
Do you have any of those Bull Centaurs? Do you have?
Yeah, we got about 10.
Oh, those are just crazy models.
They're cool. They're cool. I shouldn't get into it too much now, but to tell you the truth, in the 8th edition with the GT Indie Army book, they've got some deficiencies. They're a little hard to defend, they're expensive, and they've got a leadership of 8. You know they're going to be way off in the distance, so they're not going to take advantage of the general's leadership. It's likely they'll break.
Put them on a large target.
No, that's a good idea. The Bull Centaurs?
No, put your general and your BSB on a large target, and they'll spread to 18 inches.
I know, you'll never see my Lamassu or my Great Taurus again. I'm afraid to put them out there.
I mean, put them out there. Come on, I only got one cannon.
That's the difference between you and me. I'm going to bring like 3 cannons.
but
other than that, when I went to Gen Con, I picked up a box of those Mantic Dwarves. I've been putting them together. They're pretty cool. I'll probably use them as a secondary Chaos Dwarf unit, but in every box, every sprue has a little bulldog. I didn't know what to do with it. It didn't feel very Chaos Dwarfish to put a dog with them. So I lobbed off the head. It's got a little bull body. So I glued on a dwarf head. And glued some wings on. And now I've got in every regiment a baby Lamassu.
That's cool.
Oh my gosh.
So that's pretty cool.
Crazy. Fear the baby Lamassu.
Mm. one other bit of business we should take care of. What's today's date? The 20th?
Today's the 21st. We've
21st.
Got 3 more days for the contest, folks. Don't forget your iTunes reviews in.
Yeah, and if you sent in an iTunes review, please, not every review has been accounted for. GarageHammer@live.com. Send us an email telling us which of those nicknames is yours so we know who's going to win. The 24th, we're going to draw a name. We will announce the winner on the next show. However, we will also, if you are a fan, go to the website because on the 24th, we will announce the winner. We'll post their name up on the website so that they don't have to wait for 2 weeks to find out who won since the contest ends in 3 days and the next show is going to be up in about 2 weeks.
Right.
So we are going to post the name of the winner on the website.
What does the winner get?
A Garage Hammer t-shirt. The first. We haven't ordered them yet, and we don't have the store up on the website yet because they will get the first, which is basically going to have the banner from the website on the shirt.
It's going to have our ugly mugs on it.
Yes.
Oh, those are great. Oh, those caricatures.
Wow. And then on the back, it's going to say something like, "Oi, Snorri," or something like that, you know? So We wanted to give away a prize. We didn't have anything to give away yet.
We've actually got something after that, but we'll talk about that.
And we said we were going to talk about it this episode, but we're recording actually before the contest ends, so we're going to talk about it next episode.
We could talk about it next episode, yeah.
Plus, we don't know what the contest is going to be. We just know what the prize
is. Right, so don't forget, folks, you know, here's a little plug. Don't forget, if you listen to Garage Hammer and you enjoy it, tell your friends about it. We want more listeners. More listeners means more sponsors, which means more prize support, which means more stuff for you.
Yeah, that's one of our goals, is to like get a contest a month or something down. Because we love doing contests.
I want to give models to people, so.
Yeah, we want you to build more models and play more games. That makes us happy.
And eventually meet us and we can all be friends.
Well, some of us can be friends. Some of us are just mean, hateful people. I'm a mean old man. Just ask my students. So, that having been said...
Shaping America's youth.
Awesome.
Yes. I love it. I love people. I love meeting people, again, who knew me when I was a teenager and remember me as the kid who was the biggest pain in all of high school and the kid who you didn't want. Like, oh, did you bring that kid over? The parents always like would roll their eyes when I walk in the door. And now I teach their children.
Justice. Justice David Whitek style.
Wow.
Okay, so let's move on to... Okay, news and... Not much news.
Not really, not this week.
I mean, yes, tomorrow, the 21st, the stuff that they announced a month ago, the last of the Demons of Chaos stuff is coming out.
Right, the Slaanesh-y models, the Blood Crushers, the Seekers.
So that's...
What other demons
I thought those were... what's his name? Kairos.
Oh, is it Kairos? Fateweaver. And the Changeling.
Yeah, that stuff's coming out tomorrow.
Cool models.
The Island of Blood is still on its way, September 4th. Other than that, I don't think they've announced any more new stuff coming out. So, they have talked about how they're yeah, what we talked about last year. There's going to be more plastic high elves, possibly a new battalion since they're coming out with all this new plastic.
Let me throw that rumor out there. We've talked, I think it was last episode or two episodes ago, about the potential rumor of Tomb Kings. Well, now I'm starting to get conflicting information. It's possible that Orcs and Goblins might be out as an army book before the Tomb Kings. So, well, don't know which way the wind's going to blow, but we'll find out.
I still think that the Orcs and Goblins... I mean, everyone complained last edition that the Orcs and Goblins weren't that good. I think with the rules changes, they've become a much stronger army. I don't think they need to be the first book.
I couldn't agree more. I think.
What do you guys think?
I think they're solid.
Well, I think that their magic, something I noticed in the last tournament, is the, you know, their magic, they have no miscast. I mean, their miscast table is so different.
It's like a slap on the wrist compared to the real miscast. Mm-hmm.
They don't get sucked into the...
Well, that's another thing that has made them stronger, is if you take Orcs and Goblins, you can cast magic and not worry about half of your army dying.
Yeah.
For screwing it up.
So what do you think? If they come out with a new book, speculation, you think they're going to get the serious miscast, or are they going to keep their easy one? Just a guess. What do you think?
I think they'll change it, but I think they'd be mad to make... Because they said, if you read the fluff, here comes Fluffmeister, coming your way.
Well, the fluff defines the rules for GW, so you're probably more accurate than...
Their magic doesn't work like regular magic. WOG magic comes from that.
It's not chaos driven at all.
Yeah.
I agree.
And that's, you know, and that's part of it. And if since it's not driven by the magic coming through the chaos gates, they shouldn't have the same miscast.
When you put it that way, I think I agree with you. You're right. It's not chaos driven. Therefore, it's not going to have the same miscast.
Just like ogre magic is not.
Do they have their own miscast as well?
Yes.
Okay. And so do the Tomb Kings. Don't have miscast at all.
Yeah. Although, man, I'm really itching for Tomb Kings now that I've been reading them. Every time I read the stupid fluff, I want to build that army.
Well, you know, that's the army I was intending to build next. I put the kibosh on it because I'm expecting a new book and new models, and now I don't know what to think.
I just know that new Greyseer novel's coming out, the new Bone Ripper and Thankwell novel's coming out, and to redeem himself for all of his failures at the hands of Gotrek and Felix, they're sending him to Lustria. To go take out one of the Slaan and steal some artifact. I'm going to read that and want to build a Lizardmen army. I just know it.
I've already got half the Lizardmen in my closet not doing anything. I'm too busy with my dwarves now.
Well, your Lizardmen should come out of the closet.
Oh.
All three of you grounded me? All three of you in my own basement.
His name is David. Wah. He'll be here all week.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Try the veal, ladies and gentlemen. Skip Stevenson, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so that's it for news and rumors. Let's get on to talking about our tournament.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm so excited. I played a very ordinary series of games. But
No, well, you did fine.
I did fine. I had a great time. There's only one complaint I have, and it's a complaint against myself. I got a sports score of 14 out of 15. Somewhere, I did something to cost me a point of being nice to someone, and I am determined to get a better score next time around.
But that sports score, I thought the way that was determined was, would you play... Well, it was there were the two questions. Would you play against this army again? So it was your army build. And would you play against the player? And so for three games, that was worth a point apiece. That was six.
Okay.
And then at the end, when you ranked the players, how well they played, not how much you liked them, first, second, and third, your first place ranking got 3 points, second place got 2 points, and third place got 1 point. So if you came up 14 out of 15, that means that you know your questions were all answered yes.
Right.
So two people ranked you as the best player against him, and one guy ranked you as the second best against him.
Well, that's nice, I guess. All right. Well, so, still.
Yeah, because I got only like 12.
I mean,
Harrison
got
like 11.
Of course I want to be competitive, but realistically, the most important thing is at the end of the day, I want people to not hate the fact that they had to deal with me.
Right.
Well, so, yeah, let me just say, that was probably the hardest thing that I had to score, because all three games that I had were great. So it was like not like 1, 2, 3. It was almost like 1A, 1B, 1C.
We had a great group there. I mean, I think everybody.
It was a small group. I mean, there was only 10 people playing, and one of them was Steve, the guy, because we had an odd number. So we had a.
But actually, he only had to play one game. We had a couple of friends there who were just playing as ringers.
Yeah. So yeah, we had that 10th spot was just like the random. We had a couple of different guys there who would play in that spot to make it even. Now Harrison's not down here now, and I'm just saying this because I mean. Okay, folks, he's 9.5, and this is his second tournament. His last tournament, he lost 2 and won 1. Now, the one he won was against me, and I didn't let him win, but he won 1. Harrison lost 2 and drew on 1, and I think that first crushing loss really sort of kind of shook him up a little bit, made him a little... Because by the third one, he just had a headache, and he just wanted to go home. He didn't want to finish playing.
Oh, you know what? He's a good boy.
And when
but
we
he's
looked,
9.5.
And here's and when we looked at the rankings, he came up, and I'm looking on the computer, and he came in dead last. Mm. And part of it, I mean, he came in like 1 point behind the guy with the Goblin Army that I didn't play,
Kevin.
I think it was like 1 point behind him, and he played a heck of a game. He had some really bad dice rolls each game. I mean, even the third game against me, I had to play him in the third game, and the first shot, I mean, I hit some really good artillery rolls on the first turn, and Harrison fluffed all of his saves, and just his army crumbled, but he was really upset, so I didn't invite him down for this part of the show, because he even admitted, he even has a tough time kind of talking about it. He was ready to, like, quit when he saw he was last, and I talked to him, he's like, I'm a terrible player, and I'm like, dude, you play, even Alex told him, Harrison played a better game against him than I did. We both lost to Alex. Alex, by the way, is the guy who won the tournament. But I just wanted to mention that because people are wondering, he was in the tournament, and everyone likes him. He's like the star of the show if you read our iTunes reviews. People are probably wondering why he's not down here talking about it. He really, I just don't want to get him all upset. He'll come down later, but that's just, you know,
He did fine.
He played good games. Fine. He had really bad rolls, and they cost him his games.
You know what, though? 9.5-year-old boy in a tournament. He played like a gentleman. He reacted like a gentleman. And
he knew his army, and he knew everyone he was facing. He didn't have to ask questions.
He's a good guy.
He's a good kid. But
to be fair, I mean, there are some players at that tournament that have been playing for 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
So in the tournament circuit. So
In Alex's case, I never even got close to playing him. I was very physically far away from him for most of that tournament. He was obviously very, very good. I was happy to see, by the way, a Vampire Count player take it. I don't know why I'm sort of gunning for them, because I think that they fell in terms of tier level.
Yeah, I think that proves that they can still be a tough army,
I guess I'm happy to see Vampire Counts take it for some bizarro reason.
Well, it's just a different build. I mean, he didn't take a... he took a White Lord, didn't he? Isn't that what he had?
I have no idea.
He had a casting vampire on horseback.
Oh, okay.
What level was the vampire?
He had a level 3 casting vampire for his lord, and he had a White King BSB.
Oh, that's what he had.
And then he had a level 1.
Then he had a level 1.
Just a necromancer?
I believe so.
In a block?
No, I think it was a level 1 vampire, but it was with the ghouls. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get into some games then.
Okay, so, yeah.
Exactly. Why don't you talk about your first game?
My first game, actually, we Chris and I can talk about that game because it was together. It was a High Elf versus Dark Elf matchup.
Ooh.
It was great. So my army list, I had the block of 40 Spearmen. Everyone had full command. Block of 40 Spearmen. No shield in this case. I was going for cheap horde.
Oh, and we're going to post all the lists up on the forum. We have all the lists posted. And so, if anyone wants to go look at what was played and stuff, you can find it there.
Yep. So, Spearman Horde, no shields, like 250 points for that block. Full command 16 crossbowmen. And in with that crossbowman, I had a level 2 sorceress, Tome of Furion, which means she can cast 3 spells instead of 2. The block of 20 corsairs with the Sea Serpent banner. Sea Serpent banner means that they have frenzy. Oh, and the Spearman had the armor-piercing banner, called the Banner of Murder. And finally, my large unit of 9 Cold Ones with full command, and the Master with the Hydra banner, which means that everyone gets a +1 attack on every first round of combat. And finally, the Dreadlord with Sea Dragon Cloak, Pendant of Kaleth, which is that reverse ward that everyone likes so much, and the Crimson Death, which means an unmodifiable 6 armor, or 6 strength. Hmm. And you had?
I had a level 4 as my general, 2 bolt throwers, 2 lion chariots, a block of 20 sea guard, full command, 10 archers, and 20 white lions, full command.
Now, I had a chance to look at your list afterwards, and I obviously tried to play what I consider to be a very aggressive, gung-ho, almost thoughtlessly charging across the table sort of an army, but I noticed after looking at your list, many of your units were designed to survive a round of combat. There was Stubborn, there was reroll leadership test, there was roll on 3 dice. So you expected a defensive game, didn't you?
I very much did expect a defensive game, and you'll notice my list did not have a BSB. I think it was maybe one of the only lists. Maybe, I think Harrison didn't have
Harrison
a BSB.
Didn't either. No, yeah.
So which is a shock to me, but it proves that there's more than one way to skin a cat, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, the idea is, with all the shooting and magic I have, play defensively, have my opponent come to me, and by the time that they hit my lines, hopefully he'll need the BSB and not me.
You were playing dwarf strategy with high elves.
Well, there's a term for that.
The master engineer is going to be sick.
That's the castle strategy. That's hold the line and force them to charge you before they're ready to. And
exactly right. Think cast a comet in the middle of the table and make them run through that if they want to get to me.
Now in my game with you, you did not draw the comet. You drew chain lightning.
Correct. Well, you had four units, I think,
only
on the table.
Four on the table, right. I had 3 characters, but spread out over 4 units.
So, I opted for Chain Lightning and Thunderbolt.
With, unfortunately, all too great effect. Yeah, that Chain Lightning was probably the bane of my existence. Turn 1, you took out maybe 4, maybe 5 of my Cold Ones.
Yeah.
If anyone doesn't remember what Chain Lightning is, A, you can go back to last episode when Harrison sang the praises of it.
Right.
At my dismay.
Grant knows well.
At my dismay, by the way.
Yeah, in a nutshell, it's a spell that it's a heavy casting cost, but you're going to do D6, strength 6 attacks.
It's like a basically kind of like a really strong magic missile, but then if you...
Are there multiple levels, too? You can cast 2 levels on that one?
On Chain Lightning?
I think you can increase maybe the distance or something on it, but...
No, not even that one?
Okay.
So, but basically what it does is your D6 strength 6 hits, and if there's a unit within 6 inches, roll the dice, and on a 4 or better, after that unit
gets hit, 3 or better,
it jumps to the next unit, and it keeps going until you fail the roll.
That was the issue for me, was that first he'd target my Cold Ones.
Or until you kill a cast Sorcerer Lord.
Well,
turn 1.
But it bounced into Cold Ones, it wiped out 3 or 4, then it bounced to whatever was next to it. I mean, you'd do like 3 or 4 wounds per bounce, and the average was, it seemed like you'd hit 3 at a time. I only had 4 units, and they were too close to each other, apparently. Oh,
exactly right. Yeah, the knights were the big threat on the table, so I tried to mitigate those first.
Yeah.
And they're also the fastest moving, if I'm not mistaken.
On my army, absolutely. Yeah. They move 4, charge of 7 plus swift stride, so...
Yep. It was a bloody affair, as you would expect, the High Elf on Dark Elf.
I will have to say that I expected High Elves to do very well, and they did not disappoint. You effectively have the abilities of a Dark Elf in the High Elf army now. You, in fact, better, because you can reroll every turn.
With always strike first.
Those rerolls are just amazing. That scare me.
It's the reason why Dark Elves were tier 1 in 7th edition. It's why I personally think, and I might be proven wrong, but I think that High Elves are in that spot now.
I find myself, as Warriors of Chaos, avoiding combat with units of High Elf Spearmen. I mean, that's crazy. Yeah.
High Elf Spearmen, really?
Charging them. I want to try and get them to charge me.
When you throw that many dice and you get to reroll all of them, eventually you start falling.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
He's going to get the extra rank anyway.
And my guys are not 5 points. You know, if one falls, they're tooled up, they're 15 plus the halberd plus the shield. You know, I mean, that's 18 points a model. So you roll with those 40 dice that you're rolling and you drop, you know, 5 or 6 of them. I mean, that's a lot of points, you know.
It becomes hard to kill that many elves in retaliation. The biggest issue I had, obviously, other than the magic phase pinning me down, was, I was rapidly running out of ways to kill you before you could just wipe me off the table at arm's length.
Yeah, the idea is to soften you up with the magic and shooting and then send in the white lions and lion chariots.
I knew that the white lions were the big threat. I actually felt like if I could engage you on my terms, I could wipe you out.
Which you did, and you had me a little worried when your horde spearmen hit my white lions. I forget. Did you charge me? I think you did charge me.
I'm almost positive I did because I wanted to. I knew that was my best bet. I certainly wasn't going to charge cold ones into white lions. That's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, that's my anti-knight unit. But seeing 40 horde spearmen charging into the 20 white lions was very intimidating, to say the least.
That's scary. I got to agree. Every time I look at the board, no matter who he's playing, 40 of his spearmen, those dark elves. But I've said this 100 times on the show. The dark elves scare me every time I go again because they're good at everything.
They should be, but like I've always said in retaliation, they're fragile, and unfortunately, that's the card that I kept drawing when I was playing in these tournaments. Was they're so easily killed on defense? I have no defense.
Now you didn't take a Hydra in yours.
I love the Hydras. I rarely take them.
They're cheesy. I'll talk about that later in mine.
That's part of it.
I can't believe.
I know.
I never fought against one.
I rarely win the
tournament.
That's what I keep saying. That's,
I rarely
you want to hear a really great joke about Warhammer? The Hydra's 175 points. That's the best joke.
Oh, man.
I just want to remind folks that I didn't take the damn thing. And I'm still getting ridiculed for it.
You have that army.
I have that army, but I didn't take them. I didn't take bolt throwers, and veteran players can scream at me for not doing all these things that I'm supposed to do. And my record,
it was 1,600 points.
No, my record shows that maybe I should have taken some of these cheesy options. But
where did you place anyway?
A little smack dab in the middle. Well, 6 out of 9. So not very good. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy. I had a great time. I don't really care, to be frank. I mean, the important thing was that I met people. I had a good time.
Exactly.
I
got more than a point.
I did, I guess, have at least one positive aspect of playing against you is that we had an unusual result from your two chariots charging into my Corsairs. And out of nowhere, they managed to defeat two chariots.
Yeah, picture this, folks. Two lion chariots charging a block of 20 Corsairs.
Mm-hmm. Your impact hits wiped out, I believe, a rank.
Approximately, roughly, a rank. And in the end, the only thing left standing were the Corsairs.
Yeah, they caused enough wounds to wipe out two chariots. Both of our
The Corsairs good? Or I mean, I'm not familiar.
I like the Corsairs. I consider them to be... they've got protection against shooting, and they've got two attacks each. They're the ones that you can give those hand bows, but I don't really rate the hand bows right now.
The way that you had them set up, they can just throw out so many attacks.
Yeah, there's a specific banner that only they can take that gives them frenzy, and I think that's the only way to field them at the moment. I'm still not convinced that there's no reason to take the hand bows. I just haven't found a place for them yet. I like the hand bows. They're cool looking. I would love to model them and paint them, but not yet.
And put on a list of things to do.
Things to do when I just want to occupy a space on my shelf, yeah. Other than that, my spearmen did charge into your white lions, but they didn't take into account the fact that you have stubborn.
Stubborn and the talisman of leadership, which is a single leadership test on 3 dice.
Yep.
Once. We held, and I believe the Sea Guard ended up charging you in the flank.
They did, and that's what ultimately took away my steadfast, and I had to take a straight-up leadership test, which they did not pass. And at that point, I lost them.
And I think that is when the game turned in favor of the High Elves.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. By then, I think all I had left was my leader on with his pendant of Kaelith, keeping him alive, a couple of crossbows and a couple of Corsairs, but it wasn't enough to turn the tide. At that point, you kind of commanded the table.
Mm. But good game. Well played. Very bloody.
Oh, very bloody. Yeah, but a lot of fun regardless.
What about you, Grant? Your first game was your Warriors of Chaos against...
orcs and, or was actually just goblins.
It was a night goblin army.
It was a whole night goblin army.
With
and,
untold regiments of
no, fanatics. I think he had three hordes, right?
Three hordes.
He had three hordes of goblins.
And three trolls.
And three trolls. And
nine fanatics.
Nine fanatics.
Well, yeah. you know that number three. Well, don't
I
you?
I do. I felt those fanatics.
We'll talk about that one later.
That's another sad story.
Yeah, my first game, my army was a beefy sorcerer lord on riding around on a disc, Zinch, integral part of any chaos army. That gateway just scares people. I mean, it really does. You
Ooh,
say that,
gateway.
Yeah, yeah. It sends shudders down people's spine.
I told you were going to break somebody's heart with that spell on
then,
Saturday. Yeah,
and then it also had I had marauders. I was one of the few people that actually took special characters at the tournament. I took Wolfric. You guys talked about that last.
Yeah, but we debated it, but he's not out of control. I mean, Wolfric is...
Well, he's one of those, he's a specialty hero, which isn't so bad.
Not
it's when
so
you
bad.
Get to your specialty lords, you didn't try to come in with Archon the Everchosen or something.
But he gives you that special ability so that you can hop in from any board edge, and, it kind of does make it or break it if he
sort of circumvents
in,
the chaos weakness of having to slug it across the table.
Right.
Well, he's already across. He just jumps right on.
Yep.
He's also the perfect answer to gunline armies, which I found out the hard way
for
in our
sure.
first game.
For sure.
Right, which is why we'll talk about that later. So I took a unit of Nurgle Chaos Warriors, which all of you Warriors players out there probably smacking your heads right now because everybody says, why take Nurgle? I still think, why not? I still think it's a great choice.
If you're playing defensive, it's not as strong because it used to be -1 to hit with shooting and -1 to hit in close combat. Now it's -1 to your weapon skill.
But in a small tournament setting like this one where you only have 9 or 10 people, the metagame is different. You can count on fewer of those standard strategies, and why not experiment? Especially early on in 8th edition. Try it out.
And then I also took kind of a another Marauder unit over to the side. I said, it's a small points game. Why not try and, really beef up the ranks? And the Marauders are great in this edition. I mean, Marauders are just great. I mean, they're a glass hammer, but, you tool those guys up with corn and with flails, and they hit really hard.
Well,
they hit
first most of the time, don't
mostly
they?
Mostly because they're initiative 4.
Yeah.
And, 5 points apiece with flails or great weapons.
Oh, I keep hearing people saying they don't rate them because,
that's crazy.
They're just not that strong. But you do get a bunch of them for cheap. I mean, yes, you can
they're
take...
the same cost as clan rats.
But they're leadership 7, you reroll panic, I think.
Yeah,
don't you
do reroll panic.
Weapon
but
skill
when
4,
corn,
initiative 4.
If you give
4.
Them corn, they're immune to psychology, at least until they lose their friends.
No, what does that add to their cost, though?
30 points for the whole unit.
That's nothing.
It's nothing.
Yeah, when you take a mark, it's per
so
unit.
So if you take a unit of 30, it's a point a model. Big deal.
Right. Yeah. It's. I think they're really great. They are, if you don't get the charge off... it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter anymore.
But there's a lot of elves out there that they are going to strike first, and if they don't strike first, man, they're taking tons of wounds because they have no armor. I don't put shields on them.
That's why you take large numbers and treat them as ablative armor.
Right. Exactly.
Or you try to hit them in the front with that unit of warriors, and then use those guys as the flank.
And I tried to do that, and they just weren't quite maneuverable enough. And I took a small unit of knights. And really, my whole idea behind taking them is that these knights have, in the past 15 years that I've been playing, 18 years I've been playing Warhammer, everyone is scared of Chaos Knights. And it's just, ooh, Chaos Knights. This edition, they're really, I don't want to call them nerfed, but
they're nerfed.
They're really brought down because cavalry just in general is...
Cavalry has a very different role in this edition, and we're still working to find their right place.
They did their job too, because everybody looks at them over on the side of the field and they say, "Oh my gosh, Chaos Knights, we got to kill them."
But well, they still have a one-up armor save.
One-up armor save.
I mean, you say what you want.
4, 3 attacks cause fear.
Right.
The problem is,
and they're expensive for a diversionary unit.
They're cheaper than Blood Knights, aren't they?
Well, most things are cheaper than Blood Knights.
Well, no, I'm saying as far as cavalry goes, you're talking a similar...
Five guys was like 200 and some points.
Blood Knights are 55 before we're talking about command. What is it for a knight?
They're what, 40 base, I think?
So they're cheaper.
And
yeah,
then,
there you go.
But once you tool them up, corn and all that. But anyway, so my first...
Corn. Now they got 1,000 attacks.
They were pretty good. But
you just roll an artillery dice.
So the first turn, my first game against the Night Goblins, I got a gateway off full steam ahead, and it sucked his
trolls up. Well, it's based on leadership, right?
No, gateway is... You roll, as long as the spell goes off, you roll 2d6 for how many hits,
okay,
and 2d6 for what the strength is. If you roll an 11 or 12 for the strength, the unit's just gone.
It's not for the hits, it's for the strength?
It's for the strength, the second roll. So 11 or 12 on that, and the whole unit's
gets
gone.
Sucked into the void.
And so I rolled an 11 or 12 or whichever, doesn't matter, because it was gone.
So you pooped
and it was
trolls.
Really, on the first turn of the tournament... You know, my
Did you
first,
go first,
and I went first.
Oh, ouch!
And I just—that's the point when you go. My sportsmanship score is going to go down because of that. You know,
and I would
hope
not.
He's not going to like playing me because I just did that. And of course, you know, I kept having to reach my hand across and say, you know, I'm sorry about that. I you know, I didn't mean to do that. But then he was like, "Yeah, you did," and I'm like, "Yeah, I did," but.
You really feel bad.
We are
talking about the gentleman who took Skarsnik and Gobla and 9 Fanatics.
Yeah, that's
right.
True.
Well,
but
yeah, I mean, you feel bad when you run the table on someone.
Oh,
or
for sure. You're absolutely right.
If you're a whole goblin army, that's what you have. That's your hard-hitting part.
Well, was he able to retaliate at all?
No.
He couldn't recover.
No.
He couldn't recover.
What did his
flank.
Did you draw out his flank?
Yeah, what did his fanatics?
I had, you know, they hit my marauders, and if you kill, you know, 5 or 6 of those, oh, well, that's 20 points or 25 points. I think he did have one go into a unit of the warriors, but I think it was only one fanatic the whole time.
Okay.
Actually went into my unit of warriors and killed, you know, maybe 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah.
But it's only D6 hits, I think, strength 5.
Strength 5, D6 hits.
Armor piercing,
right.
So
it really wasn't that bad. And they jumped around the whole game, you know, kind of run around behind my units. They hit his unit one time.
That happened to me when I played you with those. I mean, in fact, my fanatics went out. Not only didn't they hit Chris's unit, they actually hit my one unit of Boar Boys and wiped them out. And then the one actually hit the other and killed him.
Oh,
you
know? Yeah.
That was just, and
that's the thing. They all kind of leapt out all together, so they started hitting each other, taking themselves off the board. I mean, that's just what happens with them. I played Orcs and Goblins for years. I had 12,000 points of Orcs and Goblins at one point.
That's a beautiful thing.
It's just what happens with fanatics. You take them, you know, you're hoping that somebody tries to charge your goblins with knights and forgets about fanatics, but...
Or someone lands an eagle right next to you.
Right, and, something like that happens. But, that's how it went down. I wound up winning that game pretty readily. I didn't lose a single full unit that game, which is, you know, kind of brought up my morale for the beginning of the
tournament.
So a tournament.
Complete full rout.
Yeah, and he didn't have a single model left on the board. Yeah, that was a pretty heavy win for me.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I know. It felt good. It felt good. Next game didn't go well.
Now, how did he handle it?
He was pretty good. I mean, he was a younger guy. How old would you say he was?
15? I'd say 15-ish at most.
Yeah.
But he was pretty nice. Pretty
nice
guy.
He was a good player, and especially with that... I mean, that gateway at the beginning. And Chris even said, you said, you know, that you were going to, you know, I was going to crush someone's dreams
or something like that.
That's
right. I posted
that spell.
Well, because you had posted that you were going to use gateway, and I believe my exact words, I felt a tremor in the force, and I knew that someone was going to just shed a tear at least once because of that nasty spell.
Yeah, that's a stressful thing to take.
It is.
Yeah.
That's going on.
All right.
Mr.
Well,
David?
All right. And like I said, I mean, we're coming close to about 45 minutes here on the show, I think. So, I mean, I want to talk about all our battles, but I just want to try to run through. I'm going to run through my first two battles because they both went really quick. My first battle, I took, I had my dwarfs. I had a lord on shield bearers. He had the one-up armor save that was immune to poison, killing blow, and heroic killing blow.
So that's kind of your standard these days, isn't it? You like to protect your guy.
He's my general. I don't take a lot of fancy banners and stuff, but I gotta protect him.
Yeah, fool you on that fancy banner stuff.
Yeah, well, you know what I'm saying. I did give him a magic weapon. He had a +2 to his initiative, which made it 6, and
He had the Master Rune of Alaric the Mad, which ignored armor saves.
Okay.
It would have been nice if I remembered that in the second game, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, I took a potion I forgot to use for all three games.
In the heat of a tournament, always. It's so easy to forget.
I had a runesmith who had two up armor save and two dispel runes.
That's right. Dwarves are just about the only army now that can actually take multiple dispel scrolls, as it were.
Would have been nice if I remembered those, too.
Oh.
Then I had my BSB, who was just basically had a regular weapon. He had a one-up armor save.
Regular weapon at strength BSB. 4, I assume, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The BSB, Master Rune of Gromeril, which gave him a straight one-up armor save. Then I had the Lord and the BSB in the unit with 17 hammerers, which made it like 20 in the unit.
So there's your big beefy unit.
Yeah, I had 10 Thunderers, 10 Warriors, Hand Weapon Shield.
Warriors or Longbeards?
Warriors.
Okay.
I had 15, I think, Longbeards. 15 Longbeards with Great Weapons.
Give them a total of strength 6, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then I had one Bolt Thrower with the Rune of Penetration, made it strength 7.
All right.
I had a Grudge Thrower with a reroll for my scatter dice, because that Grudge Thrower never hits anything.
I assume that paid for itself right away?
That actually worked pretty well.
Yeah.
Better than usual. I only hit twice, I think, with it in the first two games, but
if there's any one dwarven thing I wish I could have, it would probably be that for any of my war machines.
That's then I had my Gyrocopter, because it's the Gyrocopter.
Yeah.
My first game I won from deployment. Luke played, he was playing Warriors of Chaos. He had two units of 10 dogs, a unit of 10 marauders, horsemen, the fast cav with the throwing axes. He had 4 trolls, and he had 18 warriors. They were Zinch warriors.
Zinch? That gives them ward save?
Yeah, so they had the 5-up instead of the 6-up parry save.
Oh, no. Yeah, I guess that's how it works.
Because adds plus 1 to their already ward save. And he had the banner with the 5-up ward save against shooting, which made it a 4-up ward save against shooting.
Actually, that's a pretty good combination now.
Yeah. And then he had the Hell Cannon.
Oh, yeah.
Go
Chaos Dwarves.
Now, this was... He had literally just finished building the army the night before, he told me. He doesn't play a lot with warriors. And in his deployment, he was trying to use the dogs kind of for a screen and for a flank. But the way movement wound up going, he just didn't get it off.
So do you think he had he was struggling to... He didn't have much experience with the army in general then?
Yeah, I think it was part of it. And I mean, I don't want to... I'm not knocking him. Because I don't know for certain. But basically how it wound up, it was, you know, I did a lot of shooting with... my Grudge Thrower kept missing. And my Bolt Thrower hit... I actually shot at his Hell Cannon. Because with a strength 7 Bolt Thrower and a toughness 7 Hell Cannon with doing D3 wounds, I figured maybe I could just take that thing out.
It's actually another bit. You know, at these
plus
days,
it was on a hill. It was the one thing I could see easily.
Well, you can wound anything now. Yeah. You might as well.
So then...
did you wound it?
Yeah, I didn't kill it, but I did manage to wound it.
How many wounds?
I don't remember. I think 2. I didn't take it out the whole game. It survived the whole game.
But that 2 wounds, that actually doesn't hurt the Hell Cannon. I guess it does.
No, it does, because that's not a regular war machine.
You're right.
It's a monster with handlers. My gyrocopter went and just flamed in 2 turns. I went first. My gyrocopter, he had his marauders did their vanguard moving forward.
Oh,
which was perfect, because then I just moved 10 inches forward with my gyro and burned 3 of them. Then, second turn, I shot him with my Bolt Throwers and managed to get through all 5 in the rank. I got another 5, so okay. I just took out those. He had his dogs out, but his Chaos Warriors kept failing their charge roll. So the dogs and the warriors charged. The warriors failed. The dogs hit. I wiped all 10 of them out.
Yeah, you know what? I had the same problem, and I think the problem is partially me. You give yourself the average distance. Oh, if I roll a 7, I'll get in. Well, you shouldn't count on that. Sometimes it's like playing chicken. You have to get closer, but assume that your opponent's going to get the charge.
Basically, long story short, I wiped out every unit except I couldn't. I only could kill 3 of the. I mean, I managed to kill 3 of those warriors in that unit, because with the 5-up ward and the 4-up ward against shooting and that ridiculous heavy armor, I just couldn't hurt him.
Yeah, ask me what that feels like, Dave.
But I know. I looked at him. I actually said, now I know what it feels like when Chris's elves face off against my dwarfs. This is ridiculous.
I hate that feeling.
But I mean, the fun part was there was bonuses for taking table quarters. I know that's not in the rules now, but this was one of the scenarios.
Yeah,
I took table quarters, not on my side. I took table quarters on the other side because dwarfs can charge and move.
Yes, they can.
It was awesome. That game, I actually didn't lose a unit. I only lost like 7 or 8 models total. Actually, in that.
Did you eventually manage to take out Azinchian warriors?
No. They stayed, but I took the other...
Okay, you were locked with him the whole game.
He never actually got him up to combat because he kept failing his charges. Oh. I just kept shooting him. He had a lot of really... Some really bad rolls. I had some really lucky rolls. I didn't lose a point. Because now with Dead or Fled, I didn't lose... I think one of my units... My regular warriors got knocked down to half strength.
Okay.
But you have to kill the unit.
You got
to
kill the whole thing now.
So yeah. I didn't lose a point. That was just ridiculous. My second game was against Alex, who won the whole tournament.
The Vampire Count player.
Yeah, I had never met Alex. I really liked Alex. First of all, he kind of reminded me of my dad and my uncle because he's got a heavy Chicago accent.
Yeah, he does.
And it's just fantastic playing against. This is a guy who knew his stuff. Like, I didn't have to tell him what any of my runes were. He had a horde of like 40 or 50 ghouls. He had 5... what do you call them?
The Wraiths.
Wraiths.
Yep.
And then he had a unit of... It was 10... not the Blood Knights, the Black Knights.
Black Knights.
It wasn't 10 Black Knights. It was 8 Black Knights, his Lord, and his BSB.
Okay, the White Lord?
Right. And okay. We were playing the Blood and Glory scenario. All I had to do was take out either the General or the two... Because that was where you had, that was a point for each standard. It was a breaking point.
Oh, it was the game of Fortitude, right. Where you count the general and all your standards.
The general counts as 2 and the standards each count as 1.
Once you get down to 2 points of Fortitude, you've lost.
Right. And I got my hat taken off and handed to me in that game, to put it nicely. I had the Bolt Thrower and the Grudge Thrower were... magical, and the axe on my general, that was it. So I had nothing against his wraiths. His ghouls never really got into too much combat. It was basically my warriors up against his knights. And, you know, I don't know what's wrong with me. I got terrified because I've played Vampire Counts before, and I never quite know how to handle them. I had no idea what to do for these ethereal creatures. I forgot that my hammers were strength 4. I counted them as strength 3. I made so many mistakes. And I'm not saying I would have won, but I'm saying it would have been a lot closer. I mean, because I know for a fact the one time that I hit him with all those hammers into his knights, he had a 2-up armor save that I told him it was 4-up after the hitting, and it should have been 5. And he rolled a bunch of 4s on that one. And yeah. I just remembered after the game, I go, man, that could have changed that one combat and changed the whole game for me. And that's what I learned, is to not be nervous. Remember your game. And that was...
Well, that's Warhammer. The game is often decided on mistakes.
Well, that's why I tried to get as many games in as I could. I was always looking for a game. And I think you mentioned that before.
You were. I felt bad because every night you posted on forums. Hey, I'm there. Who's there?
Who's there? I want to try.
I can't play that much.
But I probably got in 5 or 6 games of 8 before the tournament. And if I hadn't, I would have not known my armies well.
Yeah.
I would have forgotten.
I wish I had more time. I had just come back from Gen Con, so if I had gone off and played more games, I think I would have been...
A single man.
Destroyed. Yeah.
Well, heck, what about it, though? I mean, Chris, you and Grant played... One or two nights before the tournament, and after playing him, you're like, dude, and you made changes to your army because you're just like, this needs to be fixed.
Just
but
to clarify,
you did
it's Chris, you, not me. So,
well, I only call you Christopher.
Okay,
so.
I did too. I made one quick change to my army, which was in that game that I played against Harrison. You know, my general died right away first turn. And so I made that change.
Well, when we played at UGG, though, you had dogs and stuff, and you dumped them for more marauders.
Yeah,
right. I mean,
I agree with that choice. Yeah,
really.
We had a long conversation on Facebook on the instant message. I'm like, take more marauders, dump those dogs. You're like, but I don't know. I'm like, dude, seriously, the marauders, just take more of them. Plus, you broke them up. You didn't take all your marauders in one big horde with Wolfric. You put them into 2 smaller units.
2 separate units.
And, dude, that made a huge difference
in
your army.
Difference.
Well, there's there's less need, unfortunately, for those distraction units. They don't do enough damage and they die too quickly. So, I mean, if you can get across the field in two turns, you might as well take the big block
well,
anyway.
And with, like, Frenzy, it's a lot easier for somebody to withhold their Frenzy. I mean, that's what I would use the distraction units for. Get them to, you know, pull a frenzied unit to make a charge that they don't want to make. And, I mean, that was huge. A lot of armies utilize those frenzied units. So
yeah.
That's what I always use.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it depends on who's frenzy, though. With my Dark Elves, I'm probably not going to lose that leadership test.
Right, anymore. Yeah, in this new edition, definitely.
Well, why don't we try to go quick through your guys' second units, and then if we have either take a break or then get to our third battles really quick, and then we'll come back and just talk about some of the strategy and things that happened at the tournament, and then we'll get into Garage Hammer 101.
Sounds good.
Which is, this week is deployment, which I think is a good thing because we learned
I
learned a lot
part of the game.
Yeah,
huge
so.
Part of the game.
All right, so how was your second game, Grant?
Well, I think that's a great segue, actually, because it was Chris, you and I's game. And, you know, we played earlier that week, and he definitely made some really awesome changes to his army. And I also, you know, again, it's not an excuse, but I told him at our game, I told him my strategy that I was using for the tournament, and... So, and my strategy is to get my Lord on my Disc of Tzeentch and get him, you know, first turn, move him about halfway up the field, over to the side, out of, you know, shooting arcs, things like that, and kind of sneak him up on the side, cast some magic, second turn, get him behind units, and just kind of cause some disruption there, you know, behind the line. You got to turn around if you want to shoot at him, whatever. And, so what did you do, Chris?
Well, were you able to capitalize on that?
I was. And to be fair, our first game, I did have the BSB with Reaver Bow, a unit of smaller archers. I dropped both of those, added in the Bolt Thrower, added in the Sea Guard. And I think the key was I had more deployments than you. So once I saw where your wizard was, I was able to put out those Bolt Throwers and all the shooting to counteract. And... I'll let you tell the story.
Well, first turn, I had a Harrison battle all over again, and I made the conscious choice to put my wizard out. You know, is either go on one side and have lots of archers shooting at me and a bolt thrower, go on the other side of a house and have one bolt thrower shot at me. And I figured, you know, my Lord had a 3-up armor, 3-up ward save. I got a pretty good chance of surviving that. Either way, he knows that that's the key to my army, so he's going to shoot at it either way I'm out there. So I flew him up in first turn, one bolt thrower shot, failed my ward save. He rolls a 3 for the wounds, and my Lord's dead. So, you know, right there, I kind of took, you know, my first game, I got the big first hit, and in this game, Chris got the big first hit.
Oh, so it's almost like a high elf gateway.
Yeah, it was like a high
elf deja vu all over again.
Gateway bolt thrower, right. So, go ahead.
But yeah, we continue to play it. It was still a tough game. You know, warriors and knights, they can still dish out the damage, and take a beating.
There's been some discussion before the tournament, after the tournament, and that I've heard on other forums that, you know, what levels of characters are too powerful and what levels of... in what levels of tournament should we allow special characters and everything? My big argument is, you know, I didn't hear anybody complaining about you know, the level 4 wizards or the special characters. It was, I mean, the big blocks of Chaos Warriors was my, you know, that was my hammer. I mean, that's what people were scared of.
Well, I think
after every game, people go, "Geez, Louise, those things are tough."
Well, there's a reason why I think that another tier 1 army now in 8th edition. Would be the Warriors of Chaos for that exact reason.
And
you can actually engage now.
Yeah, I've rebuilt my army list, and I even said after the tournament, if I were to do it again, it would just be two big fatty units of Warriors.
You simply cannot go past them. Once you turn the page to them in the book, it's like, here I am.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
And part of it, I think, is, I mean, we were also playing, I think especially we were talking like on our forums and stuff, there was the big thing, should we allow this, should we allow that? You know, I say until we've played it a lot, like I said, I don't want to restrict or change too much of anything until we've got 8th ed really down well. But also, we were playing at 1,600 points, which is, you know, it is a very small level. So I guess, once again, playing dwarfs, whatever, man. I don't have any magic whatsoever, so I don't have much to say. But
well, you can dictate magic though. Depending on what you take for your lord and for your hero choices, you can tell your opponent you're not going to have a magic phase,
which is kind of worked really well for me. You know, I mean, even my runesmith, I get one automatic extra dispel dice.
Did you take that item that sucks away? You can take
that's,
one of
that's
their
50
dice.
Points,
that's,
and
that's
at 16,
a great item.
I almost always take it, but at 1600, 50 points was like, I mean, that's like 5 or 6 extra warriors.
It's awfully expensive for what it does, but it's very, very good.
And in this edition, though, it's totally it's worth
it's
every point.
I agree. Like I said,
there was a lot of that debate between should we keep it to level 3, and maybe on this point level it'd be worth it. But yeah, I didn't care about magic. I cared about looking at big hard blocks or just, you know, soft blocks of 1,000 coming at you, because, you know, you say what you want. Like I said, in this game, when anyone can wound, and can I just bring this up? And I know this is a total tangent, and we haven't tangented yet. We've been really good and kept
yeah,
on target.
Really.
But I want to eventually bring it back to their game, but go ahead.
Everybody says, you know, anyone can wound in this game. That sucks. You know, the night goblins can wound a steam tank. Yes, but night goblins wound a steam tank, it's still got a one-up armor save.
Well, I like the fact that goblins can
wound
a steam tank.
Yes, and I think it's
though.
Great that anyone can do a wound, but let's not forget that, yes, that 3-strength or 2-strength mob could wound your Hydra or could wound your dragon, but your dragon is still going to have a ridiculously high armor save.
Sure, it becomes two rolls, a 1 and 6 and then a...
Yeah, I mean, so it's not like those guys are going to wipe out that steam tank. Mm-hmm. They could put the dents that allow the strong character to come in and finish it off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm not going to be afraid when that steam tank's rolling down and those 30 night goblins are like, we're going to get you! I'm not looking at that going, oh, no! You know?
Love the low strength. Yeah, I like everything having that opportunity. It makes a lot more units viable now that people wouldn't take before.
Right. All I'm saying is that this whole hubbub that I keep hearing, and I see it on a lot of the forums of, that's crap that this little unit's going to be able to wound my steam tank or wound my ridiculously powerful thing. Your ridiculously powerful thing still has a ridiculously powerful armor save, so even most of those wounds aren't gonna do jack.
I think that was one of the improvements. I think that balances out the game a little bit. It means that there are certain units on the table that aren't unkillable. It also means that you can increase the toughness beyond 6 and still play the game.
Yeah, yeah. With the steam tank, I mean, if it's got a 1+ armor save, you always fail on a 1. You wound it, you know, 10 times, you're bound to roll a couple of 1s.
It also
means
that even low strength weapons, as long as they have an unusual ability like armor piercing, it makes it twice as useful.
Oh my gosh, blood curdling roar I mean, it's a cheapo weapon.
Yeah.
2d6 strength 1 hits. But I mean, the first game that Chris and I played, I think I took out a couple of chariots with it, pretty much.
Right.
And
all I'm saying is that, you know, you get in 2 or 3 wounds with your strength 1 hits because you got to roll 6s.
Right.
Still, the odds of when you're rolling 3, you're saving those 3 wounds on a 2 or better,
right.
You might take a wound. That's all I'm saying is, yes, it's tough, but it's not ridiculous, it's not stupid,
I think it's not fair.
Because there's still, people forget, I keep hearing this in the forums and it annoys me because people keep, it's almost like you're either forgetting or you just don't want to remember that you have a really good armor save. So yes, they can wound you, but yes, you're still going to soak up most of it.
I don't know. I hear the, I haven't seen that as much as you have maybe, but I guess the counter would be try playing the game where you can't kill something and see how much fun that is.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Very good.
But getting it back quickly to your match, we could wrap it up, but a quick question. Now, you lost your general, your sorcerer lord on turn 1. Do you think that dictated the game?
Well, you lost all your magic with that.
Well,
that was the key.
It was really a key. I mean, it's a key point to my army.
You didn't actually...
I felt at that point that, you know, well, you know what? Now I'm just going to play the game for just fun.
I mean, you didn't actually say it.
I want to see what happens, and I want to see how well I can do, but I didn't expect to win after that.
Okay, you didn't actually say it, but I'm assuming, Chris, you won that game then.
I did. With the level 4 gone, Wulfric not yet on the table, there were the knights.
You know, and Wulfric came on, and with him lined up, he lined his whole army up on the very back board edge. And
so you had to go in the side.
Wolfric, I had to come in the side. So by the time I could come in, I think I got like a bolt thrower, but then he could turn his units to face because he didn't really have a whole lot facing him from the front to be
lining up on the very back edge. That's a nice deterrent to those guys coming in behind you because they're
learned after my first game. Yeah. Wolfric,
I didn't think about that. You line him up on the back edge and he can't come behind you.
You deployed in a similar fashion in my first game against you, and I have to say you did that sort of what I would call that cagey defensive style where you've got the white lions for the threat, you've got the white lion chariots for the threat where you can spring out and countercharge, but you pull back and you pull back and you keep the barrage coming. And
when I started off, right. I started off our game by saying, well, he knew and he, you know, Chris is a great player. Chris Hugh is a phenomenal player.
I would agree.
And he's a heck of a banner painter. Let me tell you something. Those banners were
great.
Sweet.
I felt like I'm skiing down the mountaintops on those little elven, you know, snow-capped mountains. they were great.
The Anarian Mountains over there.
He's a great player. You know, it wasn't a bit of cheese at all. It was great, you know, sportsmanship that he had, showing that.
Sure.
I mean, really knew what my disadvantages are and played to it. So
thank you. Yeah, great games, both of you guys.
And your second game, Christopher, went against the Night Goblins.
The Green Horde, the Fanatics.
I didn't get to see much of that game at all.
It was frustrating. It was a tie. It was frustrating. I was so close yet so far. I couldn't quite get past the line of Fanatics.
Oh, I remember Fanatics really crushed your.
They decimated
your Death Star,
for the second game in a row. My cold ones just were torn apart. He just had really good rolls. He moved right up 8 inches away, and then these Fanatics would come tearing through, and he rolled really well, and then he rolled really high, and I had to take off a big handful of cold ones for the second game in a row. And yes,
I hate them cold ones.
Yeah, Skarsnik is really amazing.
He's really good.
The game.
Yeah. He took a specialty character? I didn't even see
him. Skarsnik
is a little powerful. He's very powerful.
And he's just a hero level character, too, right?
Yeah, he's 205 points, but he's got like a total of 6 to 8 wounds.
Yeah,
he's got a magic phase. He automatically rallies when they break. Mm-hmm. He's pretty nuts. Not only that, but Night Goblins with those stinking nets are actually a little bit troublesome for Dark Elves.
If you don't take nets with your Night Goblins, you're insane.
No,
it's a lot of points,
actually,
but they're awesome.
It was an issue for me. I mean, of course, I'm re-rolling everything, and I need threes to hit, and I'm hitting a lot. But I've always felt that one of the weaknesses, if such a weakness exists in Dark Elves, and they do, the core units, they're pretty low strength. Everything's strength three across the board, except for Dark Riders on the charge, but you know, you can't make a big unit of those. So I'm trying to wound Night Goblins on a 5+, and that reduces all my advantages for all those hits, and suddenly I'm not causing nearly the wounds, and it becomes a lot tighter of a game.
Do they get their benefit from no matter where you attack? From flank, rear, anything you put netters in those units?
I believe they do.
Yes, if you have netters in the unit during combat, if you have netters, you roll a dice. Anything but a 1. They lose a weapon skill.
Yeah.
And on a 1, here's the thing. When you do roll that 1, your Night Goblins get tied up in their own nets and they lose a weapon skill.
It's a strength, isn't it?
Or is it a strength? Oh, it's a strength. Yeah, it's a strength.
-1 to strength.
But the Night Goblins cannot afford to lose a point of strength. When you roll that 1, they've
turned into mush. Yep.
They have just completely janked themselves.
Well, in a nutshell, I mean, we basically ground into each other and couldn't seem to do enough. My guys were obviously superior fighters, but with a strength of 2, I couldn't do the wounds. So my spearman and one of his multiple blocks of 40 Night Goblins just sort of sat there. My cold ones, there wasn't much of me left, and it was kind of a repeat of the first game where the only one that seemed to be able to survive was my general. He was designed to survive, but He would get stuck in. I did manage to kill his level 2 sorcerer, so that took the magic pressure off of me.
Did he have? I think his sorcerer was a 4.
Was it a 4?
He had a level 4.
Oh, he did.
I don't remember that detail.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
four.
Yeah. But he put him in a unit of Night Goblins,
right.
And that one I forget which they encountered my corsairs. My corsairs actually defeated them, and I overran them, and that was it for his magic, except for Skarsnik.
Did his trolls factor into the game at all?
No, I targeted them with magic and they disintegrated. The problem with true line of sight is that you can see everything now. There's an argument for being able to see everything. Nothing can effectively hide unless you've got a physical building.
You know, that reminds me about his army, and something that really stuck out to me and how powerful it is is my spell Pandemonium. And not to interrupt you, but
no, please,
just
go ahead.
Bringing up that level 4, that knocked him, knocked him around. Now, luckily, he had the Orking Goblin miscast chart, but Pandemonium is a spell that any doubles that you roll as a wizard, the opponent's wizard rolls, is a miscast. And I mean, that was huge. He rolled a miscast every turn after I played that spell. And that was
He didn't end up trying to dispel it?
What's that? Pandemonium? No, I don't think he... I mean, he just couldn't... He couldn't hang with my magic.
Okay,
I don't know. Yeah. I think I just did the order, you know, did everything in the right order. So yeah, no, he didn't bother to dispel it.
I should mention that from the first couple of practice games I played, I finally learned my lesson from how to roll dice in the magic phase with Dark Elves. Because we're not limited. We can roll... If I have 12 power dice, I can pick them all up and throw them against the wall and roll them all if I want to. And I've learned not to do that.
Right.
Have you actually done that?
I've rolled 6.
More than... Okay, but not more than.
You can
Dude,
roll...
Dude, Harrison goes nuts. Harrison rolls 5 or 6, and he just...
Only
he
Dark Elves
always gets away with it.
Only Dark Elves are legally able to roll more than
roll
6
more
power
than
dice.
Six,
I
really?
Can basically...
Can you can throw anything you want, right?
You can only have 12 power dice.
But I'm saying you can throw 12.
Yes,
I mean, they have no limit.
Only Dark Elves can do that, yes, but we can.
That's dumb.
But
if you throw 12 dice, you deserve to miscast.
Well, I keep thinking about doing it on purpose under dire circumstances.
So
if I know I'm going to lose, and just force it, you know. But the only miscast I had in the entire tournament was in the second one, and I got very lucky. I had the 7 result, which means... The wizard doesn't hurt, but she explodes around her, and anything in base contact with her takes a hit. And there was only one crossbowman. So, yeah, one crossbowman died, and she moved up, and no big deal. So my magic was very good. But the scenario for this particular, the second game, involved counting up your standards and your hero. And it was that fortitude you needed to have, like, you needed to reduce your opponent's fortitude, and neither one of us was able to do it. We had the same amount of fortitude left at the end of the game. So it was a tie, but the player himself was, you know, it was Kevin. He was a gentleman, a nice guy, fun to play, nice young guy. His I don't know if I'm ready to face a whole bunch more fanatics anytime soon, but, you know, a lot of fun. The whole thing was fun.
So that was our two... Our second game, and then the final game, my second game went really quick. Third game. My third game went really quick. I actually had to face off against Harrison.
Yep.
And what wound up basically it went like this. My first turn, I shot with my Thunderers. I hit with almost everything. He saved with almost nothing. I fired my steam gun on my gyro. I missed with nothing. He saved with nothing.
No.
The bolt thrower hit. And I mean, everything, it was the worst rolling for him possible. I took out probably a quarter of his army during my shooting phase of the first turn. After that, it was pretty much
Well, but high
done.
Elves don't have a ton of armor, right? I mean, I don't know.
No, they don't.
They have as much as Dark Elves, which is to say next to nothing.
That's their weakness. I mean, that's why I'm scared, because I don't have any shooting.
But, like, he had his Phoenix Guard, who have a ward save,
right.
But I didn't shoot at them.
Phoenix Guard are just about the most survivable elves I can think of, unless you put them on a cold one. And, yeah, I mean, that's when you have the ward save. But otherwise, it's the racial weakness, toughness 3 with crud armor.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so,
or in the case of High Elves, shiny crud armor.
So basically, and there I was playing as Harrison, and that went horribly wrong. And I don't go easy on Harrison. Like, I'm not gonna lose on purpose, because we've had this. He and I have had this conversation. He wants to learn, and if you lose, you learn why you lost, and you learn to get better. So of course, now Mom is texting me saying, "How you doing? Last round, I had to play Harrison. Are you letting him win? No. You're a horrible dad. He lost 2 in a row. Can't you let him win one?" I'm like, if I do that, he's not going to be happy. Uh-huh, right. You just don't want to lose and come in bad in the tournament again. And I'm like, well, partly, yes. That's true. I had a good chance of coming in a good place. I came in 4th, right behind Grant. You were 3rd. Chris, you were 2nd. And Alex won. I did pretty darn well. But the fact is, even if I wanted to let him win, after that first roll with the artillery and his crumble, if I'd have lost that game after that, he would have been like, "Dad, you threw the game." And
yeah.
You know, I love him, but I'm not going to throw the game.
When you have a game like that, and you know the dice gods are just against you, the only thing you've got left to do is to smile and lose honorably. and shake the opponent's hand afterward and say thanks for the game. I mean, and that's what he did.
Hey, you know what? But I've had that game, too. In my first tournament, I couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with my shooting. I failed everything. And in that situation, you crap your pants, dive in the pool, and swim. That's all you can do, brother. That's all you got left. You know, it's just...
I'm not going to say well said, but...
yeah, really.
Such a vivid picture.
And there's only so much you can do. So, yeah. You know, I felt bad, but that was the game. I mean, basically, after that was the game. And then Harrison conceded after, I think, the third turn.
Well, I don't think
and we packed up and went home.
I don't think there's a person at that tournament who would say that Harrison played poorly. He played well. The dice gods became angry for no good reason.
Alex told me right off when we were playing through, because I was kind of nervous and stuff. And he told me, he said, you know, your son played, because we finished so quick. We finished that game in an hour. I got wiped out. And we were sitting around just talking about strategy and stuff. And I said, you know, Harrison played. And I'm like, how did he? I was asking him how the game went. Because Harrison was like, ooh, I got wiped out. And he got wiped out quick, too. And he goes, no, he had bad dice rolls. He goes, your son played really good. He goes, honestly, your son played better than you. He didn't forget the strength of his guys. He didn't forget that he had the spell scrolls.
Ouch.
He told me.
And he wasn't
zinging me. He was just saying, he goes, honestly, Harrison didn't play a bad game. In fact, he played a better game than you did. He knew his stuff. He didn't get nervous. He just had bad rolls, and that happens.
You finished your game in an hour?
I got my butt handed to me.
No, I'm just saying you finished. I don't think I was able to finish a single game.
His white had the blade that gave him the 5-up killing blow, and he was only in base contact with my BSB. So he killing blowed my BSB and wiped him out.
Yep.
And then I had my stubborn, because when you put the Lord with your hammers, they're stubborn and they're immune to fear and terror. So I was like, these guys aren't going to go anywhere. Lord has a leadership of 10. All I needed to roll is I rolled a flipping 11. I ran.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no reroll because my BSB just died. So, yeah,
And ladies and gentlemen, I was sitting right next to David at this point, and I could feel him crumbling in his seat. Like, I could just...
I just looked at that.
He was just like... Every moment he got a little bit shorter in his seat. He's like, Like, he's becoming the dwarf that he was playing.
You know that part? Well,
shaking his fists
in
anger.
The short, fat one in the beard.
Wow.
You know that part in the horror movie where the guy has just seen too much, and he, like Renfield, he just snaps and starts laughing, and that's it? You gotta cart him off? That was me. He ran, I just laughed and pointed and giggled my way.
That's
to
pretty right on.
It was, yeah. You looked over, you're like, what are you laughing at? I'm like, dude, I just rolled an 11 and I totally failed my break. You're like, why is that funny? I'm like, it just, if I didn't laugh, I would have cried. I actually asked Steve, who ran the tournament, if there's win, tie, and loss. I go, is there a place for got my butt handed to me? He's like, nope, sorry. I'm like, okay, well, then I'll just mark lost.
It's just a page for the Book of Grudges, Dave.
Any mistake, if there's any piece of advice I have for anyone who's going to attend a tournament out there, any mistakes that you make at your first tournament, let that burn in real good in your memory because you're never going to make that mistake.
Well, and I'll tell you, not only that, but I said this at the tournament, I'm glad the mistakes I made were in his favor, because if I make mistakes in his favor, I screwed up, it's stupid. I make mistakes and it goes against him. Then if you win, then everything comes into question. You know, did you make... I mean, was it an honest mistake? Were you cheating?
Well, yeah. I mean, when you make a mistake in your opponent's favor, it's a mistake. When you make a mistake in your favor, it's cheating.
It's cheating.
Yeah, I mean, whether you meant it to or not. So yeah. I was happy that I didn't screw up and do something that went the wrong way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, so was my whole tournament. Why don't you guys finish up your last games, and then we'll take a break, because it's been over an hour.
Chris?
We'll save him for last. He was the champion.
That's true. Okay, Grant, go for it, man.
Oh, okay, I'll go. My last game, I'm just going to... A couple of points were...
You played Taz,
I played Taz, the female player.
She was the other Dark Elf player. She played a completely different army than I did.
She was playing the... What is it? Is it Kane? Is that...
It's basically a Harganeth army. So she's got the Cauldron of Blood, a Hydra, the Witch Elves, two units of Dark Riders, and her general was actually the Death Hag with the Cauldron, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there was a Sorceress. Actually, she had the identical Sorceress to me, level 2... Tome of Furion, an extra spell, 3 spells. Okay.
Did she have 2 bolt throwers too?
She did.
I believe she did. Okay. You're right.
Yeah, I really can't say that I played that game really well. I got one of my units just in a really bad... my big Marauder unit got just in a really bad spot right away. You know, set up for, you know, actually failed a charge, but I took a chance on a really long charge, and it set up for them to have their flank exposed, and I made that stupid mistake. They just got charged off right away. I mean, they got charged in the flank, ran away. I mean, I made some mistakes.
What did you get charged by?
Witch elves.
Yeah, okay, and so they're just going to carve you up.
They just carved me up because they have lots of attacks and lots of attacks against toughness 3
guys. Did they get one of the blessings of Cain at that point?
Yeah. I think was it frenzy? Did they get frenzy?
They already have frenzy. They've got three attacks naturally poisoned attacks. Then she probably just gave them an additional attack.
Attack, yeah.
Oh, God. So that means four attacks per model.
Yeah, which was awful.
Yeah.
So that happened, and
that would make it 26 attacks poisoned.
I had to hide my, because she had the bolt throwers both set up on a hill, and I had to hide my sorcerer the entire game behind a house. Now, I pulled off a whim. he stayed behind the house the whole time.
Chaos! Zinch! I'm on a disc! I've got armor! I'm so bad! And I'm hiding behind a freaking barn!
Thank God for that house, because the game before that turned
the
one
cinematic
bolt thrower,
irony of
and then
that.
I'm staring at two bolt throwers the next game.
And you won! So your Chaos Warrior right. General hiding behind a
right.
barn.
Well, he just keeps popping out, and I have to... Hello. Hello. And he popped out. I got another full on gateway off.
Another one. Too.
Yeah. So
what
I got
like,
out. Wow. And it was just harpies, I think.
I forgot about that. That's right. She took harpies too.
A unit of harpies that I
and
took
crossbows,
out.
Crossbows. Yeah.
And then I got another key charge off with my Chaos Warriors unit that took out her. What were they? Corsairs? Is that what?
Oh yeah.
Where's the
yeah.
cloaks?
Corsairs.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she. I charged the Corsairs, made them run.
That's going to be an unfair match.
Her idol, or what is that, Cain?
The Cauldron of Blood,
was
yeah.
right behind them, so I overran into that and then made them run as well.
Yep.
And that was basically what won me the game. Now, Wulfric, at the beginning of every game, has to declare what he hates. You know, he's after something. He's the hunter of men. So he declares, not a character, but any model in the army. So I actually declared at the beginning of the game, I saw that big monstrous Hydra. I'm like, I hear that thing is nasty. So I declared the Hydra.
Sure.
So Wulfric pops
you
in.
You
right
that?
In, yep.
It's not just a character?
It's any model. I thought it was a character the longest time, but the book says model.
Nice.
So I declared the Hydra. I jumped in right behind the Hydra, which I think helped because it made the Hydra turn around and ignore the rest of my army, which is cool. But, man, I charged in Wulfric with, you know, all of these attacks from with flails, you know, strength 5 guys. I mean, I know the Hydra's toughness 5, but you get enough attacks and you think you're going to do some damage.
Statistically, once you get enough attacks, you're going to go past regeneration, but a few
right,
attacks,
but,
yeah.
And Wulfric strength 7 at that point with,
so you're winning on a 2.
But he only had 4 attacks and I think he missed with 3 of them.
Oh.
And he rerolls attacks too and he still missed with 3 of them. So,
oh my gosh.
And then she kept just rolling ridiculously good for her regeneration rolls, wound up never even chased Wulfric off because she stomped the whole unit down to the man.
Yeah, that's gonna be a thunder stomp.
And the breath weapon right away.
Well, that's only
gonna
be once though. That's only
right.
once.
Yeah, but still, I mean, what was it? 2d6 strength 5 hits.
Yeah.
No. Because I came in the first turn behind the Hydra. She turned the Hydra around and actually,
breathed on you.
It's actually more efficient. Yeah, you'll get more that way. Yeah. But it's nice in the combat as well.
Yeah. Well, a benefit of the Marauders too is that they're on the 25 mils, so you don't get quite as many.
Marauders are on the
25. Yeah, I know. Isn't that it's strange, but they're still they're Chaos Warriors in training.
They're just big.
Big. It's all those muscles.
They're big Norse Viking-looking big dudes, man. Come on.
5
Yeah, but they wear a diaper made of fur.
Every last one of them looks like Conan.
Kind of.
They wear leather and chains, which is creepy, but whatever.
Yeah, that's how they do it
in the
Far North.
So I officially hate the Hydra. I'm going to make up a button.
Many people do.
I hate Hydras.
Many people
do. Join the club.
God, that thing's... Cheesy armies taking 2 Hydras, you know. And
ladies and gentlemen, the Chaos Warriors army is complaining about the Hydra.
That guy. I'm not playing against the guy with 2 Hydras.
That Hydra's scary. I don't want to fight it. Did my corn... Juggernaut.
One of these days, I'm going to build an army with 2 Hydras.
Yeah, and I'm not playing you.
Fine.
So that was my game. I pulled out the win just because I got some really good strategic charges. My sneaky gets Lord hiding behind the, you know, just popping out, blasting the trees in a Zinch and and the Gateway, which the Treason of Tzeentch is an awesome spell as well.
Go ahead and relate that, but
Treason
what that spell
of Tzeentch is a spell that allows you to, works great against dwarves, by the way, allows you to make a unit. Each model in the unit makes an attack against itself, one attack, with a weapon of my choice from that they are carrying.
Okay.
So a unit of dwarf hammerers, will each one will hit itself and roll to wound itself with one hit. So a unit of 30, or even high elves, they re-roll against each other.
Oh, you, that's
against
right.
themselves.
That's right. You had Harrison in that game you played here. You had Harrison do it with his... sword masters.
I didn't even have him reroll. I forgot that they would, with themselves in that speed of Assyrian, they equal the initiative.
Yeah,
so they
but
would reroll that hit against themselves. It says it's made as a normal close combat attack against themselves.
But if it's attacking itself, that's effectively, it has always strikes first versus a target that has always strikes first, so you would
so
not be able to
cancel
reroll.
Each other out. So
oh, really?
Not,
yeah. Oh, so they didn't reroll. Mm. Oh, so we did that wrong. Anyways.
What's a little cheating?
Good
learn something. Interesting.
Cheating helps. Helps me win. No, I'm just kidding. Well, thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, no worries.
But anyways.
That you're a cheater? No problem.
We aim to please here at Garage.
But still, the Treason of Tzeentch is great. I mean, it's a great spell. Between those two, I mean, my magic really, you know, helped me win that as well as the great charge.
Okay. For myself, my third game was against the Lizardmen, actually. This is my one win, and woohoo! So, it was a pretty standard game. This is the first game where I didn't have to worry about my my Cold Ones getting decimated in the first turn. Luckily, Lizardmen have a very short, effective range. They have to move up before they can start peppering me. Mm-hmm. I did have to face off against, not a Slan, but a level 2. Inexplicably, the level 2 was not deployed in a unit. That was his undoing. I was able to wipe out his magic phase very early on. He did deploy...
I wouldn't say it's inexplicable, though, because if they stay within 3 inches of the unit, they still get a 4-up lookout, sir.
You can't count on that.
Yeah, but I'm saying they got a 4-up lookout, sir, and...
I didn't shoot it. I cast a spell at it.
Right, okay. But then they also get... I'm just saying, they have that, and that way, if they do miscast, you're not blowing up your unit.
3d6, weapon skill 4, strength 4 attacks, all targeting one model. I got him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I got him good. So,
who were you playing again, though?
I was playing Lizardmen.
No.
Who was the player?
You playing?
It was a ringer. I believe it was the ringer match.
But who played the army? Who was
Ryan Noah?
Oh, our noob?
Yep.
Okay, just was checking. I didn't know I don't remember who you played against. That's why I was just checking.
Yep.
I'm not making any comments about the guy who's only played 2 games in
his
whole
life. Let
me
just get through my damn match.
He got a win. Let him
win. It's not like I pointed out your mistakes when you were going through it.
Oh, I sucked, and I said, I'm teasing you. Come on. You're my best friend.
Here,
if
look
I
at
can't
this,
tease
this
you.
This down here. I got him in his zot.
Get me.
There you go. Anyway, so the important thing was, luckily I didn't get strong-armed, long-armed the whole match, so I was actually able to make my magic work, my shooting work. I was able to take out one of his salamanders early on with shooting, thank goodness. So Dark Elf Crossbowmen are very good when you give them a chance to fire. My magic was able to tear apart his spellcaster, so the magic phase became mine. I didn't have to worry about the Slan, and Saurus are tough, but when I've got the Horde unit, I was able to actually just kind of make the game work in my favor. I was able to outmaneuver him a little bit. And skinks have no survivability whatsoever. They're cool, but they just have no survivability. So I was able to dance around them a little bit, and it was a pretty straight-up match. I believe the scenario was if you can kill the general, you win outright. But in this case, I wasn't able to take out the general. He's a little too tough, but I was able to kind of maneuver away from him. And in this particular match, the Cold Ones finally worked the way I wanted them to. Once you just charge them in, I've got so many attacks. The Hydra Banner means that all of my guys are getting additional attacks on the charge. And even with, what's it called? It's called the Cold-Blooded. Even with Cold-Blooded, once you reduce his leadership past a certain point, once you get it to 5 or less, they're not going to pass anyway. And that dictated the game. Long and short of it was, I was able to finally pull a win out. But it was a great game, and frankly, I won against a relatively new player. Ryan's only had a few games under his belt, so... more credit to him, really. He played a very good game. He's still learning how to play.
He is catching on quick.
He's a good, well, he's a smart guy.
You work with him?
I do. I work with him. Okay. Really nice guy. And he's actually, when we had him on the show before, he was learning how to play. This is a side note, but he was learning how to play with the vampire counts. And he's had a change of heart. After playing with the Lizardmen, he said, oh, I really, really like this army a lot. He had a good time with it. He picked up the army book. And it sounds like he might switch. He might jump over to the Lizardman camp.
It's a good army to play. They do a lot of things well. Cold-blooded.
Yeah. And once he gets his taste of the Slan, I think he's not going to want to go back to taking the Saurus.
All right. Wow. So now we get to the championship. This is the rubber match right here. Alex and Chris, who basically they were both 2-0 at this point.
Yeah, we were both 2-0, and this game was not all that it was billed to be. It ended very quickly. Let me just preface everything by saying that Alex is a very experienced tourney player. And he's the type of player that will recognize immediately any type of mistake that you might make, capitalize on it, and make you pay for it. And that's basically what happened. Looking at his list, I realized that I had to take out the ethereal unit first with magic, with my level 4 caster, and I would only have one or two rounds to do so. All the while, his knights and his ghouls were bearing down on me in the center and on the other flank. So he moved up. That's basically my plan going into it. He moved up. I tried to magic. He had a dispel scroll and some good die rolls, so I wasn't able to touch his wraiths on turn one. He moved his black knights up on the other side, and I moved my white lions up and my two lion chariots up to counter. And stupid me, this is the mistake. I moved my one lion chariot within 8 inches of his wraiths, and he saw that and he charged. And the minute that he declared that charge, I knew I had lost the game. Right,
because
there.
At that point, the momentum's going to carry him into the next one. You're going to lose them both.
The way that he came in and charged, he basically rolled my entire flank except for my 20 Sea Guard and my level 4.
Because your army's not built for that kind of combat.
Not at all.
On. Okay.
Yeah. So it was just a matter of time. So we wiped out everything with the wraiths. All the while, I'm peppering his general's knight units with RBTs, repeatable throwers, and magic. So I eventually destroy his knights and his general, and even his BSB, but it wasn't enough. He starts crumbling, but...
What turn of the game did you start the crumbling?
Turn 4.
So it wasn't enough, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't enough.
He won the entire tournament with a unit of 40-some-odd ghouls, 5 wraiths, 8 black knights, a vampire on a horse, a vampire on foot, and a white king BSB. He had 3 flipping units, 10 horse, 5 wraiths, and 40-some ghouls. I know it's only 1,600 points, but there was one huge block, 10 guys, and another 5 guys. And he cleared the table on everybody. He was a good player. I was pretty impressed. I mean, I got schooled, and I enjoyed watching it because it was just like, wow, this is a guy who knows how to play.
It's nice to watch. Yeah, unfortunately, I never had a chance to really watch him, but it's nice when you watch someone who really knows what they're doing, and you learn something just by watching he would consider to be just a mundane game.
When you get ripped up like I did, I mean, just torn apart, and you look at the game, that was a great game. Like, even though I got schooled, it was nice to see someone playing it that well and just who knows exactly what they're doing. You know you're playing against a good player. You know you're playing against, and he was a good, and he was a gentleman about it too. There was no gloating, no, I'm going to wipe you out, tear you up. He tore me up, and I walked away smiling, which is not always the case. It was good. It was really good.
Well, to credit to this tournament, every game I played, win, lose, or draw, every game I walked away smiling, feeling a real sense of satisfaction for playing against really good players.
Yeah.
Tournament all overall, I really had a good time. I also felt I learned something, especially all 3 matches, I had a problem with not being able to charge. And at first I thought, I'm just not rolling very well, but you can kind of control that. You know, since the charge only matters 1 point in terms of combat resolution, you just learn to move a little closer maybe and force the charge.
There's also that banner, I think, that allows you to re-roll a charge roll.
Oh, in the main rule book, but if you...
Is there real... I mean, that's, yeah, that's pretty good. I mean,
I think it's expensive, though.
That field charge, especially if you're charging two units.
I want to say
you're expecting both of those two units to
I want to say it's 55
one
points,
of them
though.
Doesn't.
You know, there's a that lot of huge things that allow you to re-roll stuff. Like, when you had you have the thing for the extra, like, your leadership test, your extra roller, extra
yeah,
die.
Gleaming banner. Yep.
I would never take those things. Like, I had a lot of stuff. Even my dwarfs, I have a rune that allows me to roll one dice for a leadership test, which almost guarantees I'll make it. I never take them. It's like, that's a lot of, it seems like a lot of points. But especially in this edition, where those combats go on, those banners and those runes and those are, suddenly are really, really,
yeah,
can
those,
really
those little trinkets at the right time.
Can turn, yeah, at the right time, it can turn the tide.
Well, and I think, you know, this is a really good point. Something that, if I was listening to this podcast, something that I would want to know is maybe from each of you guys, what do you think you learn from this tournament? I mean, what are the big two things that something listening to this is going to learn from us blabbing for an hour about?
Hour and a half. Yeah, we're going to have a break. Here's what I learned. It's good to be really gracious, both winning and losing.
For sure.
Not to worry so much, because I unnecessarily felt a lot of pressure, especially in that second game. The big thing is, know your army. My shield bearers didn't attack. I forgot I had dispel runes. I forgot what strength I was. Know what you're doing. I mean, just, you know what I'm saying? You can make mistakes, but at least know what your army does, because it's stupid mistakes that are going to cost you the game. Your guy moves out too far. Your guy doesn't get is not in the right position for a charge. My guys, I'm not even using them when I should be using them. Those are the things that if you're there, I was there to have fun, but I would have liked to have won the whole darn thing. And if you're going to make those kind of mistakes, it ain't going to happen.
Well, I don't think I'm going to win the whole darn thing anytime soon, but if I was going to play another 16-point tournament like this one, I think I would have spent a little more on magic defense. I think the metagame demands it.
I don't think you can afford it for a 16-point game.
Well,
you have
something,
one model.
Something's going to have to give. For
1,600. We knew what he meant.
I know, I'm teasing him. You said a 16-point game. Yeah, I have my model and you have your model.
I am fielding one Dark Rider. I win.
Well, 4 points of that has to be core, so. Anyway.
Well, all right. But 1,600-point game. I'm surrounded by smart and hammers.
Smarty McSmartenhammers. All of you.
I would definitely take more on magic defense. At least one Dispel Scroll, I think, would have really benefited me. If there's one spell in particular I'm worried about, at least, you know, by turn two, I should be able to engage into close combat. In the army that I was fielding, protecting myself from the killer spell, at least in one of those phases, could have really turned the tide. And I think that more magic defense in any game is probably a way to go. And two, I guess I've learned a little bit more on how to deploy my forces to almost guarantee the charge, since quite a few times I moved myself out and just had myself hanging in the wind for my opponent to countercharge with two units, which, in the case of my my spearmen with you, I think that's partly what happened. No, it wasn't your game. Maybe it was the... I don't remember. It was probably the Orcs and Goblins. It doesn't matter. But in any case, it certainly put me in a bad position to be countercharged by two units, and once that happens, you're going to lose the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You lose Steadfast. But I'll try again for the next tournament. What about you guys?
Anyone else want to add anything? Either of you two?
I just think, I mean, the big thing that I learned, and just as I've been learning in the games, is that it is what we're going to cover later this session, is deployment is everything.
Yeah.
You can lose your game before you even start by deploying somebody on the wrong side. I found that out in a game that I played earlier this week.
The game's too fast.
It's really fast. And if you've deployed something just way off balance, or you've forgotten about the mission of the game, and you know, you didn't deploy your units accordingly, the game's over too quick to counteract to that or to really do anything about that. Yeah.
I would say for me, going into a game, you have a plan, but also realize your opponent has a plan. So the game's not always going to go the way that you might expect it.
Yeah.
The other thing is,
for sure,
right.
That's the difference between strategy and tactics. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And David, you mentioned knowing your army. It's also helpful, I think, required almost to know your opponent's.
Oh, agreed.
Well, yeah,
agreed.
Yeah, but I mean, I like to know all the armies. You know who's great at that? Who just
sits around reading the army books and memorizing the stat lines is Harrison.
Well, besides all of us, you mean? Yeah.
Well, I mean, but he, I mean, I'll ask him sometimes, like, what do those guys have? I've shot across the table because it's like, he's like freaking Rain Man. It's just like,
good skill to have.
It's nice to have the little reference desk over there. But
that's one of the benefits that I feel that I have. You know, being a beardy old git, like I call him, for I've played the game 18 years. That really the stat lines haven't changed that much.
Not too much. No,
they really haven't. And sometimes they do, and it'll throw me off. And then I feel like I'm a cheater at that point because I'm like, oh no, they've got a toughness 4. They've got a... Oh, man, that was 2 editions ago.
Yeah, once upon a time, elves actually could get up to a toughness 4. And
oh, really? I don't even remember that.
All right, well, listen, I think we're all getting a little antsy. Why don't we take a break, because this show is going real long. But, heck, I like a long
show. Come on, Garage Hammer, more bang for your buck.
Everybody said on that, well, not everybody, I think one guy said, but, I like a long show, too.
Well, you know what, and I'm going to say this, because I know every once in a while I'll get a comment, and I don't mind the comments. Folks, in fact, we got some really good emails this week with some good constructive criticism, not hate mail, but some good constructive criticism. We love it. Send it to us. But our theory is, if the show, the show's always going to be 2 hours, might grow even longer, like last week or last show went 3. You got 2 weeks to listen to it. Feel free to pause. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I rarely listen to an entire podcast in one sitting. So, feel free to pause us, but we're gonna talk until we're done talking, because that's what we do. When we come back, the Phoenix Prince will be with us with his shout out and with his thoughts on Army Builder and the huge differences he's noticed now between playing in the crypt in the basement and playing at a tournament. And then we're going to talk about deployment. So we'll be back in a few minutes. Have some fun. Go get a glass of water or something stronger, and we'll see you in a few.
See you in a bit.
Okay, so the show's on a break, and while they're on a break, we're here at a different time and different place.
That's right. We didn't just dub this in.
That, right. And so we have the list of contestants here who entered the contest for the first ever Garage Hammer contest, and Harrison is going to pull the name off the hat.
We literally have a hat with everyone's name who submitted a contest entry, and Harrison's drawing a name, and that name is... David?
Johan Fagerholt.
Johan Fagerholt.
Johan Fagerholt.
Johan, if you're listening, what we need from you now is an address to send the shirt to and a t-shirt size.
So if I remember correctly, Johan posted that he is our first ever iTunes reviewer from Sweden.
Excellent.
Sweden!
Johan, woo! Congratulations. You're going to get the first ever Garage Hammer t-shirt. Send us your t-shirt size and your mailing address. We'll get this out to you post-haste.
Yeah, send it to garagehammer@live.com. Address, shirt size, and we will get that out to you right away.
As long as we're on, we should announce that we already have prize support for the next contest. I don't think we have the logistics of how we're going to do that contest.
Right.
We'll probably announce that at the next contest, but just so you guys know, should we say it?
We'll announce the contest at the next contest?
Okay,
in the next episode, we're going to tell you what you have to do for the contest, but... When Chris was at Gen Con talking to the cool, cool guys...
Ronnie Renton threw us a box of Mantic Ghouls and said, do something with this. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to give it to you guys. Any VC players, any wannabe VC players, this is what you want. These, in my humble opinion, are nicer ghouls than the ones that Games Workshop produces.
Well, they actually look more like ghouls and not like weird monsters with their bones coming out of
them.
They're
great. They're really nice models.
So, and, next episode, yeah.
We got a box of them. That's a box of 20, I think.
Yep.
So, you would stay tuned. We'll give you the way to earn these fine models.
And during episode 8, you will find out what you need to do for the contest. And that contest, you'll have till, episode 9 or 10, we'll announce the next winner.
That's right. And one thing I wanted to mention now, I don't want to give too much away, but we mentioned that we wanted to do more to provide more contest support for you. We've done that. Details to follow, guys. We've got reliable contest prizes coming your way. So look forward to more from Garage Hammer. If you have people who play Warhammer, tell them to start tuning in, because we will have more to give you every episode.
More prizes, more stuff and things for you, the listener. So now we're going to go back to the episode that we're in, but we're not here right now.
That's right.
In that episode, because we're on the break. All right, thanks, guys. Talk to you in a minute.
Bye.
Okay, welcome back. We are back from the break, and Harrison is here with us. Hi, Harrison.
Hi.
Before we get to the Phoenix Youth, we do have our shout-out from Jamie Searle, who is Drake Pendragon on the forums.
Hello, Drake.
He sent this one in. He took Harrison up on his offer, and he actually was very kind and sent us an email saying, could Harrison read this? Would it be inappropriate? I read it and said, absolutely not, but not only is it not inappropriate, but let's do a regular shout-out, and we'll do the whole scene for you. So hopefully you'll recognize this one. So here we go with the shout-out that he wanted to hear.
We've won again!
Ah!
But what is best in life?
The open step, a swift horse, falcons at your breast, and the wind in your hair.
Wrong! Harrison, what is best in life?
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and hear the lamentation of the women.
That is good.
That was a bit like Conan done by Muppets.
But that was the scene from Conan the Barbarian, and I think that we just wanted to hear Harrison as Conan the Barbarian. Thank you for crunching paper on the microphone. That makes for good radio.
Fozzie, what was best in life?
That'll be okay for next episode.
Conan comes to Fraggle Rock.
What sure.
Okay, so now it is time for the Phoenix Prince.
Dun, dun, dun.
With our very own Prince Harrison.
Crackle, crackle.
What?
Crackle, crackle.
Okay, face the mic. So, Harrison, what do you want to talk about today?
Oh, that was the chain lightning,
was
wasn't
going
it?
That was the chain lightning. Crackling, crackle.
Crackling around him, sizzling my sorcerer. Oh.
What do you want to talk about today, Harrison?
I was going to talk about my game at the tournament.
Heck
with
yeah.
Taz.
Oh, yeah. Taz was the other Dark Elf player.
Yes, she was.
Came out to a draw.
Let's talk about what army did you field?
I fielded 27 Spearmen.
Okay.
14 Phoenix Guard.
Full command for everything, by the way, yes?
Face the mic,
no, I did not have full command for my Phoenix Guard or Swordmasters. I only had a champion and a musician.
Okay, so Spearmen, Swordmasters.
Yes.
Keep going.
14 Swordmasters.
Okay.
14 Phoenix Guard.
Uh-huh.
8 Silver Helms, a level 2 mage with a Silver Wand.
What does the Silver Wand do?
You get an extra spell.
So it's like, okay, yeah.
It's basically the Tome of Furin. You get, and, the prince on a barded elven steed with...
The Sword of the Antihero?
Yep.
Yep.
Yay, one of my favorite weapons. And...
So how'd it go?
I take that now, by the way. I put that in my...
It's a really Sword of the Antihero. It's a fun weapon.
Yeah.
But you're right, actually, because of the metagame, people are going to be taking multiple characters, so it's a smart choice.
Mm-hmm.
But, so you played against Taz, you played against Dark Elf, so why don't you tell me about that game a little bit?
Well, what happened was Taz did a Vanguard move.
With her two units of coal, or Dark Riders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of them I just shot to death with my bolt thrower, with my 6 bolts on bolt thrower and my 12 archers.
And you wiped it out?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just gone.
Nice.
I charged the other unit of Dark Riders with my Phoenix Guard. I got it down to the champion.
Now, that's curious. She didn't run with them?
No, she did not.
Oh, okay. So she stood and shot.
Yeah.
And Phoenix Guard aren't going to care.
No, okay. I didn't, at all.
Did you lose anybody?
Nope. And then, she had Witch Elves with her stupid cauldron.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, she does.
And... Well, on the next turn, she charged with her harpies. It took me 4 turns to... By the way, people, it took me 4 turns to kill that one champion.
The champion on the Dark Rider?
Yeah.
With Phoenix Guard?
Yeah.
A little louder, Harrison.
It took me 4 turns! Oh, because she had Word of Pain on me, which made me weapon skill 1.
Oh, and she probably had to keep casting it, but okay, sure.
And then... the harpies fled, and I couldn't pursue because... I was still in base contact with
the they charged
champion.
The unit that was fighting the champion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I couldn't pursue because I was still fighting that stupid champion.
Right.
Can I point out something that happened here during the game, which Harrison learned about what you call luck and talking smack during a game?
Oh, no, don't.
Yes, this is funny. I was playing against Alex, and, you know, Alex was rolling his magic, and everything worked for him. He was just replenishing his units and stuff, but it was always working. I said, you know, everybody talks about the horror of these miscasts, but I'm just not seeing people miscasting too much when they're playing the game.
That's a recipe for disaster, David.
Well, I don't have any magic, so for me saying it as my dwarf, I didn't care. Across the venue, at the other end, Harrison, at the exact same time, is bragging to Taz. And what did you tell her?
That I had never cast a miscast in the whole time I played this game.
And then you threw the dice, and what did you do?
I threw 5 dice at Chain Lightning, and double sixes came up.
So, not only did Harrison curse himself, but way across the game, I was cursing him, too, and not knowing it. And totally messed you up there.
Yeah, and my mage turned into a strength 10 grenade that killed 2 silver helms.
Yep.
And... and
was it at least the small template?
No, it was I believe it was.
It was the 3-inch template, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there is little chance of you dying like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
My mage, actually, believe it or not, only took 1 wound.
Yep.
And I took care of her bolt throwers, and that's all it could go to. Because stupid, I forget.
Her army is like the kitchen sink. It's got everything, yeah. Including the Hydra. What was your experience with that Hydra? What happened?
It chomped up my swordmasters.
It did?
Yes, it did.
Really? Wow,
yeah.
Okay.
My swordmasters did like a wound to it.
Was that because it regenerated everything, or did you just...
It regenerated everything, and then part of the help was because of this, the Beastmasters have 3 attacks apiece.
It does help. So we're talking about 7 from the Hydra, 3 each, so it's a total of 6 plus 7, 13 attacks all told, yeah.
Yeah.
And Thunderstomp. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, if they hadn't used it yet, the Breath Weapon as well.
Did it charge you?
No, I charged it.
So it wouldn't get the Thunderstump, would it? Or does it?
It does.
It does.
Yeah, it does every round.
Just
throw some hatred for good measure.
And hatred. Well, yeah, the Hydra doesn't...
Yes,
it does.
Yeah, it does get the hatred.
Yes,
it does. Awful.
Yes, it's...
I hate Hydras.
Yeah, let's all just say that one more time. We hate the Hydras.
I don't... Hey, hooray, I'm for the other team. I love Hydras.
Wow.
No,
I'm going to record the House Rock reference.
Interjection. Yep.
Yay, I'm for the other team. We might have just found the title of this episode.
There we go.
Wow.
Hey, that works on several levels.
We should do something from Vampire Suck. We should hit him in the head with a shovel.
All right, what else was in that army? There was the Cauldron of Blood. How did you fare against that thing?
Oh, it was like, it was like staying right next to the Witch Elves.
It is Witch Elves, yeah. Now, every turn, that thing can cast a blessing, either a ward save or extra attack. Or
it did a ward save and then, like, a extra attack, and then it couldn't do anything because it wasn't close enough.
Okay, but do you think it made a difference in the game, or was it just sort of supplementary?
No, it was totally made a difference.
Okay.
Because without the extra attacks, Taz wouldn't have just destroyed my spearmen and almost destroyed my archers on the next turn.
Did she cast it primarily on the Witch Elves?
Yeah, that's all she casted it on.
Okay,
because that's all she could.
Because of the range? That thing has a 24-inch range.
That was the only K-Knight unit.
Oh, no, but you can use that on any unit.
Oh, you can?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Oh, maybe there was a mistake being made there. Then.
The issue with being K-Knight is that as long as that thing is on the table and they're within a certain range of it, they are automatically stubborn.
Oh.
Which is cool, which is why if you're going to take a cauldron, you want to take either executioners or witch elves or both. But, so, what did you learn from that match? Did you learn anything in particular? Is there anything you'd do differently next time?
What I would do differently is, not charge the witch elves while it's right next to the cauldron.
If you can help it.
Yeah.
You think
so how'd that game wind up for you? You drew, right? It was a 30-point difference.
Yeah, Taz beat me by 30 points.
Mmm. So close, right?
Yeah.
So would you shoot at the witch elves next time or magic them next time?
Yeah, I would probably magic them up.
Yeah.
And I'm creating a new group called I Hate Witch Elves.
I like them. I think they're great.
I hate them.
You just like them because you think they're cute.
They're relatively cute. You're right.
But you never take them, right? Didn't I hear you say you never really take witch elves?
I have yet to field witch elves.
Well, part of that is because the 90% of his games have been against my dwarfs. And naked witch elves against dwarfs
their weapon skill is 4. Unless I'm taking the cauldron, they have no defense whatsoever. But the poison attacks are nice.
6, is that right?
Yes.
Pretty high.
The initiative, in 8th edition, that starts to make a difference. You're right. And the poison attacks, 2. And they're not that expensive. I think they're 10 points, I believe.
Do they have Frenzy?
Yeah, they have Frenzy. Okay. So, I mean, they're starting to look better and better. It's just that on the core level, I'd rather take the Corsairs for the protection.
Right.
Mm. Well, Strength 3, Toughness 4.
Yeah, and she had Curse.
Or Strength 3, Toughness. I'm saying he's going F against my dwarfs, who you're going with guys who are at least Strength 3, Toughness 4, wearing heavy armor.
Yeah, the poison text doesn't make much of a difference when he's still saving in a 2+ in 7th edition.
Yeah, so. I mean, but and now I'm maybe saving on a 4 or 5, but still, I'm with all the attacks back, with no armor.
I'll be taking armor. In 8th edition, I have a place for them that makes sense, especially with, as you pointed out, the Initiative 6. And the poison attacks is really nice, but you still have to expect that you're going to lose so many of them.
Yeah, you are.
I mean, it's such a fun thing to shoot at. They're naked. I'm going to kill a whole bunch.
Oh, and Harrison also wanted to, on the last episode, we recorded on the 12th, released it the morning of the 13th because it took me that long to edit it. Harrison, on the last Phoenix Prince, pointed out that he was waiting for Army Builder to get it.
The day we put it up, Army Builder was done.
That's right.
And Harrison says he just wants everyone to know that he gets the credit for that. Because he told Army Builder, hey, get it done. And the next day it was done. And he knows they're listening. That's what he told me. So go ahead and tell him.
With bated breath to the Rise Hammer. Yes.
Yeah. The guys who design Army Builder, while they're designing it, listen to Garage Hammer.
You think so?
Yeah, probably.
Wouldn't that be nice?
All right, so is there anything else you want to talk about?
Not really.
Army Builder, we need sponsors.
Hey, Army Builder.
Digital Lone Wolf. Hi.
Okay, so, well, that is this episode's segment of the Phoenix Prince.
Yep.
And it is getting late. The Phoenix Prince is going into the Phoenix bedtime. So we're going to take a quick pause here. Harrison's going to head upstairs, and we will be right back with
Warhammer Deployment. 101. That's right.
Garage Hammer 101. Be right back.
Your game was tied at 7-0. When Franklin found he had the ball, he made a connection in the other direction, and the crowd started shouting out interjections.
Ah, you threw the wrong way.
Darn, you just lost the game.
Hooray, I'm for the other team.
When the feeling's not as strong.
And we're back.
All right. Well,
here, now, Chris, slide on over.
I'm doing it.
I'm doing it!
Not you.
That you're Christopher. That's Chris.
Oh, okay.
I'm doing it.
Well, we're going to get into some Garage Hammer 101. This week's episode, we're going to be talking about the importance of deployment. I don't think anyone needs to be convinced that deployment is incredibly important, despite the fact that most units are, in translation, faster, in a way. It makes deployment all that much more important because you have very little chance to maneuver before you're already in combat. So let's get into it.
You used to have time to, if you didn't like the way you were set up, you had some time to switch it, move things around. Now you don't. Especially with being able to see everything with your true line of sight, you're set up, you're out there in the open. There's no chance, there's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to, you can't, I mean, unless you got like a couple of buildings or something on your, you know, with terrain. And we won't get into too much terrain talk. We did a lot of that last time.
I think we covered terrain, yeah.
But unless you got some buildings or something thick to hide you, everything's right there in the open. Your army's right there. So deployment has become, I think, even more important.
Yeah, well, you've traded one game for another. In 7th edition, I would say that you'd have won maybe two combats with a unit before the game was over. And with 8th edition, it seems like you can have a combat per turn. I mean, starting on turn 2, you can count on, if they're still alive, you can count on them being in combat almost every phase of the game.
Yep.
So let's get into it. I mean, deployment, one of the first advantages, and this is a very simple and obvious thing, but if you have got a quantity army, you can put out your less effective units first and force your opponent to start deploying more important units so that you can react to them. Obviously, if you've got something that you know is a counter for your opponent, you want to deploy it close to last.
Yeah, that's a really good question. What is the first thing you guys tend to put out? When I play my dwarfs, I almost always, first thing I put out will just be my straight-up warriors. Just because they're my core choice, they're generic.
That gives me a little more room to maneuver with some of my other things. The only other variance I ever have on that is if I am starting sort of with my anvil, if I'm going to have that big block of hammerers, I may put that down first so that I can surround it with those smaller units of warriors.
I guess the caveat here is, and I'll say this just about for every topic, depends on the army, right?
I guess.
But for the Dark Elves, it depends on the army I take, but I could see wanting to deploy my my flanking forces like Dark Riders first because they're almost obviously going to go on the flanks anyway. It's not giving anything away. For Bretonians, maybe my less useful units can go on the table first, like my peasants, since they're going to be... I don't care about them as much. They're there to, like, tie somebody down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give away my important units like my big lances. Once my opponent knows where those are, they know where the strength of my army is, and they're going to react to it. So I want to...
So,
anything that's going to make a difference in the game, anything that's my hammer units that would dictate which way the strength of my army is, I'll probably want to deploy them close to last. So, I guess that's the general strategy for me.
What about you, Chris?
I'm the same. Save your critical hammer units for last.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, cheap disposable units, so to speak, will go first. Eagles, fast cavalry,
yeah,
that sort of thing.
Grant?
I always find it really difficult to make that first deciding choice.
Is that because you're playing Warriors of Chaos?
With Warriors, and I don't take any of those dispendable units. I kind of learned in this edition that I hate dispensable units.
But you don't count your Marauders as ultimately expendable?
No, not really.
Okay.
I mean, I really...
But they're as close to as expendable. If you're not taking dogs,
they're 4 points a model. I mean, right. they're pretty affordable.
They are, but again, I mean, I have a very set use that I really want for
But
them,
you're counting on them to do a job.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So...
There's nothing that's just cannon fodder.
For me, it's usually that, you know, big old unit of warriors right in the center. For me, that's what I do.
So it's totally different.
So it's kind of like,
but
you know.
It almost doesn't matter what you're going to be facing because a big chunky block of warriors is likely going
to
deal with it.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of like with my hammerers. If I'm not certain what to do and I don't, because I'll put that unit of hammers. I know they're going to be stubborn. I'm going to put my lord in them. A dead center, put them down, because you know that's going to be your anvil. That's right. The thing that's going to hold.
And in a large points value game, I could very easily see spending 60 points just to take two units of five warhounds just to get that one up on the opponent I just wasted two of your turns.
To take away the advantage of being out-deployed.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. And, I mean, 60 points. And they still will do something.
That's not bad. I never thought about the use in the deployment phase of putting them out so you're like, oh, God, they're useless, and I've learned nothing about what you're placing.
Right.
Plus, if they make it to the flank, it's a point. It may not disrupt anything, but that's a point of combat res if they make it there.
It's a good strategy. It makes me think that if I was going to do my Dark Elf some more, maybe instead of having a unit of 20, I could do two units of 10, but it increases the number of deployments I have by one.
They're going to die, you know, Just make sure it's not a unit that's going to affect you as far as panic, you know, because if they're deployed right on your flanks, they get the first turn, which if you're doing that, it's very likely that they will because they're probably going to get that plus one for finishing before you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very, you know, a very key point is that plus one.
Well, especially if you're putting your dogs way out on the flanks, I don't understand why, but don't the dogs cause panic in the Warriors of Chaos Army?
Yeah, but the Warriors get to re-roll and they have
Warriors
a leadership
get to
of
re-roll.
Eight.
That's true.
It's not much of a threat.
But still, it always shocked me that the big, massive, scary Warriors of Chaos, look, the dogs are running away. Ah! It just made no sense to me. But that's just me, and I digress.
Well, you know, the Warriors of Chaos, they're pretty touched. And they love their dogs.
Yeah. They must.
So what else do you guys do? War Machines. Sometimes you can get away with deploying those first if there's an obvious place to put them.
Well, if you've got a hill that you really need, you might as well because it's obvious they're going to be there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, if I was ever going to take I don't think I would, but if I was ever going to take the Tomb Kings with that sort of Ark of the Covenant thing, I don't
the
remember.
The casket.
Yeah, the casket. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's a viable...
The Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, it does look like that.
It is a much less certain thing, though, whereas in 7th edition and in prior editions, if there was a hill... That's where the cannon was going. That's
yeah.
where the, you know, and in this edition, no.
Well, I've got a little something to say about that. I found interesting, and I never thought about this. I never realized it, and I actually started. I heard someone talking about it, and it was probably on Podhammer. I stopped sort of deploying on the hills. I started putting my artillery out on the corners so that if something's coming towards you trying to get the flanks, you can get a nice easy shot at it. And if they come up the center, you can hit their flanks with it. But here's something really interesting. Deploying, and I tried it, and it worked like a charm. I deployed my... I was playing Orcs and Goblins. I deployed my Spear Chuck because I had forests in the corners of my table. This was last edition when the forest was just a forest. But I deployed them right up on the edge, like about an inch in on the forest. Now, I was within an inch, so I don't know the new rules. If you're shooting out of a forest, if you're right up close, I don't know if there's a penalty for that.
It says clearly that there's no penalty for shooting out of a forest.
Okay, so I go an inch in. I'm shooting out of a forest. You can't land that eagle in my forest and then tie up my unit with combat with your eagle. So I'll put him inside the forest, have him shooting out of it. You're at a minus one to shoot him, and your flyers can't come in and engage me engage my war machine in combat. I love deploying my war machines in a forest.
Well, in this edition, they can do it.
Yeah.
They just take a dangerous terrain test, it seems.
No, not if you deploy there. It's if you're moving in there, and they're not going to move.
That's just saying the model attacking you.
The eagle.
Can the eagle land? It'll take a dangerous terrain test.
It can land in there, but it has to.
Any model can be just about anywhere unless it's impassable. But yeah,
I'll take that risk. You want to land your eagle on a 1 in 6? It's going to do nothing because it's going to just get wiped out.
It's going to die, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm cool. Well, it'll take one wound. Eagles have more than one wound. But it'll start off. I mean, so you're not going to tie me up as long. You're going to run a bigger risk. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's not as effective as it was in the last edition, but it's enough. If you don't want to put them on a hill, or you don't have a hill on your side, and you want to risk that roll to see what happens with your forest, I like deploying them there. It's harder to shoot it. It's harder to take it out, and. It adds a little more defense to that war machine.
What do you think of this? That magic item that's a building that you can take out of your pocket?
The
pocket tower?
Yeah.
I won't make any jokes about the pocket tower, but it's 100 points. So if you're taking it with your wizard, that's all he's got. But, man, it's a folding tower.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. It might be a little bit of a gimmick. I know on one of the other podcasts, one of the Empire players is using it to great effect because he's deploying it with two mortars behind it, and then there's a cannon on top of it. And the problem is, the moment you're playing someone with scouts, game over. And it's still 100 points, and you've got a lord who's got no...
Well, not necessarily. I mean, they still got to take it, and it's still very defensible. I mean, buildings are hard. It's hard to get a guy out of a building.
Yeah,
but
if it's only being defended by two guys with a cannon, they're going to lose. They're going to lose. I like it, but it's
how many guys can you put up against it, though? I thought there's a whole... reread the building.
I think six models can attack.
Right,
six.
Yeah.
But, you know, six skinks can probably take out two crewmen.
That's true. Well, once again, I don't have magic, so I wouldn't be taking... But in fact, my dwarfs, the biggest complaint I have is there's 85 really cool magic items that I don't get to play with. So all the new stuff and the new rules, I look at it and say, well, that's cool for you. But, I wouldn't take it at all. But, I mean, it's a gimmick.
Gimmick is the right word for it, I think.
It's an interesting concept, but I think that... I don't think you're going to see it in a lot of games. And unfortunately, I think it's just a little bit... close to the cheese line, where when you do see it, players can't help it. They might roll their eyes a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just a little strange.
If you're willing to spend 100 points, I mean, in a 2,000-point game, that 5% of your army, so that you could pull out a surprise tower, I say keep it. Have it. Have fun with it.
It's a fun thing to have in the book. Once in a blue moon, it's fun to see it on the table, but I wouldn't bank my big strategies around it.
Well, exactly. If I'm playing against it and you're willing to waste 5% on I've got an extra tower.
Well, and you're going to get somebody who plays the cheese to that and just brings a 10-inch by 10-inch tower, you know, and then, oh, there's my tower, and it doesn't define in the book, but
I think it says it's got to be...
Well, it says, or similar size, so I don't know if they're referring to the GW
tower. I think they're talking about the GW tower. It's got to be kind of similar. Because that's not, 10 by 10, that's not a tower, that's a fortress. I would call, right. You pull that out, I'm calling shenanigans.
And that goes back to the, you know, you don't want to play against that guy.
Yeah, you don't want to be that guy. Exactly. If you're pulling that out, exactly.
But so, like I said, with my war machines, but yeah, if, once again, if you don't want to give up too much, I mean, war machines pretty much do this thing, and you can put them out there, and that's not giving away your strategy too much.
And they have the long range to shoot wherever anyway, so.
Oh, look, your dwarves pulled out their cannon and their bolt thrower. What a surprise.
Well, if you deploy your war machines early, it also kind of, in a way, you can force your opponent to play defensively if they really don't want to get shot, and there's a place for them to deploy in relative safety. You can almost count on them being there.
Mm-hmm.
So
you that's kind of, another strategy, yeah.
You can force your, if you do it early enough, you can force your opponent to deploy in a defensive fashion where they might not have the offensive capability. You know, their deployments might be separated by a building, for example.
Yep.
And
you put out your war machine, you know they're going to put that thing behind a building to hide it, so you're forcing the issue with them by letting them know, I've got it, so now you've had to stick this in the corner to keep it safe.
Yep.
The scenario itself is going to dictate your placement as well, your deployment.
You're absolutely right.
Well, yeah, if you get the battle of the pass, that's going to change.
I guess we're talking about in your average face-off.
Pitched battle.
I guess we're talking pitched battle, because, yeah, once you go to, I suppose we could talk for a lot longer if we went through the strategies.
There's so many variations.
Why don't we keep it to pitched battle just to keep it generic enough so we can actually.
That's a good point, Grant. Thank you. Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, once you get deployment down on a basic strategy, then you can start figuring out your variants. But, let's get basic deployment strategies down.
I guess my bottom line was, when I'm deploying, I guess I want to be able to make an assessment on what I think is best suited to go against. What is my unit best going up against? When I was playing my Dark Elves, I would hope that whatever their strongest unit was would not be a match for my Cold Ones. And I'd want to be able to get them straight across the table and charge. Of course, I wasn't able to do that because I was going to be out deployed. I only had 4 units, but that's the theory. I'd like to be able to get directly across from something. If I've got the edge, like you are with your Chaos Warriors, you put them in the center because you know I don't care what you have. These guys are better, and I will take you. So you might as well put them straight in the middle and just charge them across.
Now, let me ask you guys, do you guys agree with that? With, you know, like where Chris, where they put, you put your heavy hitter, he put his heavy hitter dead center. Are you going to put your heavy hitter straight across from it because you want to try to go toe-to-toe and take them out?
Not necessarily heavy hitter to heavy hitter, but a unit that's designed to take out that specific threat. Like, my White Lions are designed to take out Knights.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
The minute I see those go down, that's where
right.
White Lions
and that's go. That's what I would react to. If I know where his White Lions are, I'm going to keep my Cold Ones as far away as possible.
And they're stubborn. Something to hold that unit.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
Well, so that's what I'm saying, because I'll tell you what, if I'm playing my Orcs and Goblins, and you put those, you know, that heavy hitter there, I might put my Goblins across from it.
Oh, yeah.
Something that's,
yeah.
Because you know what? I may look at that and say, I don't know what,
deep.
I have no idea what I have that's going to be able to beat that. So I'm going to actually put my cheapy guys who might be able to hold you up for a turn so that I can try to slam you from, because.
Mm-hmm. So then in order to deploy properly, you need to know what your units are capable of and what the counter is for your opponent and what your opponent has that can counter you.
Mm-hmm.
And part of deployment is understanding what works well against something else and making sure they're as matched as possible.
Yeah.
But
I'm just saying, I wouldn't necessarily take, okay, what, you know, that's your big gun, what can I put this in? I may not throw out my other big gun, or the guy, someone necessarily designed to go, I may not even put the guy designed to go against that unit straight across from it. I may put out the little crummy thing that he's going to want to go and I can wipe this out in a turn. Good. Throw that up there and I'm going to try to bring my guys in from the flanks. I mean, it depends on sort of your strategy of how, not just who's going to take these guys, but how you want to take them. You know what I'm saying? Because you might have a ton, I mean, you might just have a lot. I mean, you said your White Lions are designed to take out
cavalry.
They'll kill
armor.
Knights. They'll kill knights. Yeah, they're not so good against fodder, but against anything with expensive units with heavy armor, you're going to chop right through them.
Yep.
Yeah, because they wind up being strength 6, so it's minus 3
rerollable.
Save.
Yep.
Strength 6, reroll, high initiative, always strike first, stubborn, and have a hard time shooting them. Yeah, they're an effective unit.
Yep.
But if you've got, like I said, let's say you've got someone, you know, someone's got their cav that, you know, like his knights have a 1-up armor save. If he gets any sort of a banner with a ward or a reroll, suddenly that
changes that dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now you're going, okay.
I still wouldn't put Chaos Knights against the White Lions.
Oh, no.
No way.
Not anymore.
No.
Not purposely, no. But
no.
I'm just saying.
They're going to be gone. If I charged in to that unit, those knights would be gone.
Well, because he would attack first.
He gets what? What is that, 10, 11 attacks? Depending on how wide you go.
Assuming there's a champion, there's 5 in the front, so that's 6 plus the one, 5, 11 attacks.
Did you run him 5 wide, 6 wide?
I have 5 wide.
Yeah. 11 so still that, 11 attacks.
I'm just pointing out that depending on the way you think you want to play it, you may not put that guy directly across. You may try to say, listen, I need to get in on a flank. I need to guarantee something else. So, I mean, there's all sorts of bits of this, of the strategy of how you want to, you know, you really, I mean, it, you know, you want to give away as little as possible while getting as much as you can from where they're putting their stuff. And that's not always going to be easy. And it's also based on what you have left, because you never know what's going to come across the table. But when you see him putting up his, you know, he's loading up his little units off on the side there. You know, that's part of the metagame, too. When you're putting your units off on the side of the table there, I'm looking at everything you got there and thinking, okay, yes, these guys are built for this, but then that's going to be there. Where's that going? I, you know, it's a constant. There's a lot of little tic-tac-toe, not tic-tac, what the hell am I talking about? A little bit of chess and a little bit of, you know, cat and mouse there of, you know, how much are you going to give away? How much are you going to hide? But it's not always that obvious, as put it, right across. That's all I'm saying is that, you know, even if it's designed to take him out, you might not put him straight across. You, in fact, not putting him straight across, now that could really confuse your opponent. Wait a minute, what the hell is he doing? Why is that guy over there?
Case in point on that, all right, Grant, our first game, you put your knights down on the flank, and I thought, ooh, chaos knights. So I put the white lions immediately off to that flank to counter them.
Right.
And that was one of my big center units. And it was way off on the flank.
Now, that's interesting. Were you able to then simply scoot over to the middle, forcing you to play the catch-up game? Is that what ended up happening? Or did you end up trying to engage them?
In that first game, I think we hit each other. I whittled the lions down enough that they, you know, they had maybe a rank left. And by the time I got into combat with them, they, you know, it wasn't quite as big of an issue.
Okay.
But when we met at the tournament, and I think you might have thought, oh, Chris is doing something different. I put my white lions down first, right in the center, and you went, ooh. And right when I did that, I thought, oh, I don't know where his knights are going. I think I just made a mistake.
Well, but when you're in the center, and we were playing 4x4 battles, so when you're in the center like that, you don't have to worry about the flanks as much, so you can react. They're already movement five.
I think the ooh was more because your elvish butts were falling off the edge of the universe.
Oh, there. Very like, back of the
you're
table.
Right on the edge of the
line. Oh, well, yeah.
So I think that's where the ooh came from. Oh, I can't get behind that.
Oh, so you set them up in the middle, all the way back. Awesome.
Yep. And I think, you know, that brings up the Wolfric, too. Reserves. I mean, what do you, if you're deploying, I mean, I think that's a very useful thing. I basically, with my army, I always counted on getting that +1 to roll to start because I had one unit in reserves, and I really just had 3 units to place. So pretty much every game, I think I got that +1 for that first turn, which I think helps.
For sure. So, with the Dark Elves, they're a little more expensive, so I can sometimes count on being able to get that +1. With Bretonians, it's a different game altogether. I always pray, so I'll never go when I want to go.
Right.
Now, do you guys prefer to go first or second?
It depends on the army, right? I mean,
first, yeah.
For Chaos Warriors, I would
chaos
imagine.
First.
Yeah, because it's one less turn of shooting.
And they have, exactly. With my dwarfs, I don't care if I go first or second because they are such a giant rock that I'm going to hit you and hit you until you get to me, and then hopefully you'll just break like water against me. The only time I want to go first, but the time I really do that it matters is if I've got miners. Because my miners can't come out till turn 2.
Mm.
So I want to go first so that you only get one turn before my miners can come out.
Yep.
Because they're going to deploy later, and I want to get them out as quick as possible. So if you have guys that can't come out until the second turn, you know, you want to get deployed so you can get out first.
In this edition where the charges, the only difference between charging and not charging is really that plus one, and
one
maybe
point
the position
of combat
of your,
resolution. Yeah,
and maybe the position of your troops, it brings you in further towards someone's line if you're the one getting the charge off. But I don't think first or second turn matters as much in this edition.
I play Dark
maybe
Elves.
Maybe this is a conversation for another one. This may
I play Dark Elves.
What?
And
we went on a tangent?
Yeah. And Chaos Dwarves, and both of them have a heavy magic and a heavy shooting phase. Maybe with the Chaos Dwarves, not such a heavy magic phase anymore. But the point is, I can cause a bloody nose on turn one.
Right.
I just assume go first and do that.
Well, I guess my argument is actually that going turn one is pretty much preferable to any army. I would think that you would want to go first turn.
With my Bretonians, if I had my druthers, there are actually times where I'd prefer to take turn two, especially in 7th edition, only because if they move first, there's a chance I can get off my turn one charge.
Okay.
Right.
Or maybe they
inches.
Could come into, I guess if you've got bows with a shorter range, they come into your shooting range then?
Same with Dark Elves.
Yeah.
Same with Dark Elves.
So
a lot of spells with 24-inch range, crossbows with 24-inch range. There are times when I would just assume they move up so I don't have to move. And it makes my repeater crossbows slightly more likely to hit.
Yeah, if I'm using my thunder. Well, here's another question, and this is back to actual deployment. Is, you know, you've got 12 inches off the center line. So for most boards, you're playing 6 foot by 4 foot.
Right.
So you got basically 6 feet across the wide side and 1 foot forward on the board because that 2 feet in the middle is no man's land. I used to always deploy right up on the 12 as close as I could. Well, especially because my dwarfs were so darn slow.
Mm-hmm.
And I only had a 24-inch range with my guns, so I wanted to play right on the line so I could at least that first rank and get a shot if I went first. But now there's a lot to be said because you get into combat so quick. You know, do you want to deploy all the way forward? I mean, you know, if I've got my guns, I'm going to deploy really, especially if I know I'm going to be going second. I'll deploy on the very back line. I like
the back of the board deployment. I think that was really smart of Chris, and
yeah.
I would do the same thing. My Skaven army I was just talking about earlier.
Yeah. Again, it depends
on
the army.
I think that's what I want
to
do.
Well, yeah. And plus with your Horde army, you may have to deploy in the back line only because, especially with your Skaven at 2 points a bottle, you're going to fill up that entire deployment zone.
You're
going
to need to deploy in reserves, so a unit in front and another one behind them at some point.
Yeah.
Don't forget, too, spells now, being what they are, you can get 48-inch magic missiles and...
But
yeah,
you,
so
you
that first turn
it.
Magic phase, I mean, that was a big thing for me. That's why I wanted my first turn. I wanted that first turn gateway or that first turn treason of Zinch. Mm-hmm. I didn't have shooting, but, I wanted to, A, get my guys close, and, B, have my magic phase first, yep. Because I can do some damage with that.
Well, with High Elves and Dark Elves also, if you get the first turn, we have the bolt throwers. So if there's a big target out there, or a single target... We can knock them down, as you know. We can knock them down turn one.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, where are you going to deploy? So, I mean, I think basically we all agree that it's, you know, the trick with deployment is to give away as little of your strategy as possible.
At least that's one particular way to go. If you've got the numbers to deploy, you may not be able to dictate when you go first, but you will be able to out-deploy your opponent. What's more important to you? Lots of numbers of deployment, but not necessarily commanding who goes first, or...
And you're never assured it. But I don't think there's ever been a time when I've gotten the plus one that I haven't gone first. But you're never...
That plus
one...
There's
still a chance.
My
yeah, you roll a one, and that
yeah,
guy needs anything
too,
but a
sure.
two. But there's a lot of other things that I think go on in deployment. And I think if you're a new player, I think there's some other things we should talk about. And this may be really simple, stupid head game stuff, but one of the things, like, I was talking to Grant, I want to build a new table. Like, I want to build an actual, that I could just unscrew the legs and take them off and have a nice wooden table. And one of the things I want to do is I want to build an 8-foot by 4-foot. It's going to be wood. I'm actually going to paint the 6 foot in the middle green and put the 2 feet on the other side, do a, I don't know, maybe one of those red and white orc checkerboard patterns.
Cool.
And then I'm just going to varnish, like, 3 or 4 or 5 layers of clear varnish on the top. Partly because on my board, when I'm moving those moving trays, I always snag on the felt, so I'm going to have it be smooth. But I want to have that 1 foot on either side so you could put your models down on the side and not on the table. I love when I'm watching people play, and they just go and they pile all their models on this side of the table. And so they're deploying. I know exactly, if you've got... You know, you're 1 foot, you got 6 foot of deployment zone. You take all your models and put them on these 2 feet on the end, because I don't need this space because, you know, you're giving away that you're going to be putting your models over there. You know what I'm saying?
Now we're reading into that. Now we're
you're talking about psyching out
poker,
your opponent.
Poker Warhammer. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could do the same thing, but then suddenly move everything and say, oh, this spot was where I was. They're just holding this spot for these guys.
I think there's something to that. And a lot of times what I see in deployment is when Steve and I play at Over My Place, casual games, what he does is he puts all his models on a tray before we even do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that I don't know what side he's going
to
be on.
Exactly. I don't have one. When you used to not be able to pre-measure, you know, if you're going to sit there and put out your dice one foot up, and then put everybody on that line, you've told me exactly how many inches away I am from everything. I mean, there's little things like that that you want to take into consideration. If you're deploying your models in your unit and you're going to put your general in them, maybe one of the things when you deploy is don't leave the spot open for him. Put them all to the front of the tray and move them later when your general's going to go in, because you're telling me. I mean, if you want to, I'm just saying, if the point of deployment is to give away as little as possible, get in your best strategic place, it's these other little things you're giving away that maybe, you know, I mean, we've all said deployment can win or lose you the game. You know, on my first round of the tournament, you know, my opponent wanted to use his dogs as a screen but didn't deploy them. He deployed his unit up as far front as it could, so then they were on the flanks of the unit. Well, they never screened him because they were on the flanks, because he wasn't thinking when he put that first unit down and put him all the way up. So, I mean, I think there's little things like that that, yeah, you're talking about the metagame. You're talking about psyching out your opponent. But you should do that. Here's another thing with me. I have an idea of where I want stuff to go. When I design an army, I'm actually, one of the things I do, especially when I do Orcs and Goblins, I know there's going to be a lot of units. I will pull down the table and I will put them out and see, this is kind of how I imagine, all things being equal, this is how I want to, know what you want to deploy. If your opponent puts out a thing and you're sitting there looking at the table for three, first of all, you're annoying the heck out of me if you're taking 3 minutes per unit to deploy, because I'd like to play the game eventually. But also, if he's putting out stuff and you're like, okay, boom, you put your thing down next, as you know where it's going to go and you put it down, you seem confident and you look like whatever he's doing, dude, he's ready for it. He knows what I'm doing. He's ready for it. I mean, yes, this is all the psych out, but I'll tell you what. We had this. I told you guys that story before. The first time I played Vampires, I didn't know what to expect. He moved everybody forward. I went first. I shot at him. He moved him forward. He used his magic to replenish him, and then magicked them all right up in my face. Mm-hmm. I felt like I lost that game before one round of combat had been fought, because he was marching along and doing his stuff confidently. And I was kind of confused as to what I wanted to do.
You're reacting instead of on the back foot
from the very start.
You don't want to look like you're reacting. And that's what I'm saying. You know, granted, you might have to. If he puts something down that really confuses you, it may take you a minute. But when you're don't put it down and then slide it. No, more here. Do I want to move? Figure out where you want to go. Put it on the board and get your hands off it and pull it back as quickly as look. That's part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
That goes back to knowing your army. It goes back to, you know, knowing what you want to do, being confident in your book, knowing your rules, knowing what your opponent's army does. Because in that exact situation where you, just brought that up, you didn't know what those vampires were going to do, and you forgot that they can make themselves move and march up. I mean, you want to. The more knowledge you have, knowledge truly is kind of power in this game, and knowing what
is
you
half
have
the battle.
Wow.
Okay.
G.I. Joe.
Well, that actually kind of ties into something I wanted to bring up. Is in 8th edition something that I'm going to start using a lot more. I used it a little bit in 7th edition, but it seems almost like a guaranteed is the battle standard bearer, the army standard. Because you're able to re-roll leadership tests. There's a 12-inch radius around that model, and you want to keep in mind that if you're going to be relying on that for most of your units, you have to kind of envision how they're going to be set up on the board as you start setting them up. You get one, and then you get another one, and oftentimes beginning players will set something up, and two or three deployments later they realize they kind of covered up most of the good area, and suddenly you've got a unit that's going to be way off to the side and sort of ineffectual for that deployment because you deployed poorly. So thinking about where the whole army is going to be set up even before you start playing helps a lot, especially when you've got units that are going to be interacting with each other, like your general or your battle standard bearer. So remember the radiuses. This is even more important with Tomb Kings. When you've got that 12-inch spell radius, most of their powerful spells are about 12 inches apart. So, you know, for deployment for Tomb Kings is extremely important. You got to keep everything tight within that 24-inch radius.
Yeah. When I take Slayers with my dwarfs, because they're naked and people want to just shoot them up, I almost always will have a standard bearer who's got the standard that gives you the 5-up ward save against shooting. Mm-hmm. And ours, it's good for anyone within a certain, I think it's a 6 inches of the standard. So I always know to make sure I leave room behind that unit to put my Slayers right behind it so they're within that range of that, like you said, within the range of that standard, so that at least as they're moving up the field, before they break away and choose a combat, I've got to make sure if I place that thing and I place it in the middle of everything and now my Slayers have to be somewhere else, they're dead. Because people are going to shoot the heck out of them because they're naked.
Yep.
Well, and that is, what is the word that you guys used the last, the synergy?
Strategery.
So, have we done a fairly haphazard but competent job of covering deployment?
Wow, I feel like we haven't almost. There's so much to cover.
around,
a lot of different things.
Yeah, there's so many things. And that's the thing with deployment. Honestly, I think the best way, and personally for me, when I write up an army, if you see me writing it on a pencil and paper, like if I'm sitting at I'm sitting at some event and I'm not paying attention whatsoever and I'm writing up an army, you'll always look at my sheets and in the corner, there's a little map of a table with me drawing little blocks and circles. This is how I plan to deploy these guys. You should, seriously, don't wait until you're sitting across the table from your opponent to think, okay, I wrote this list, now how am I going to deploy it? Practice that beforehand. If you're drawing it on paper or actually deploying those units. Because the other thing is, how big are those units? If I'm running a horde, I need to know. I need this much room to place this thing down. So, like with anything else, practice makes perfect. And you should be practicing your deployment before you lay it out there. Before all the poker playing and all the psych outs.
Before tournament time.
Well, and if you're playing those casual games, I mean, I know David said that you don't want to, you know, if the other guy's taking 3 minutes to deploy, he wants to play the game. But I think it's okay in those casual games to take that extra minute to think about.
Yeah, you're in it for
at the
fun.
Tournament. You want to, you know, that's when you want to really.
Oh well,
go.
Yeah. I mean,
if
I'm
you're
not
playing a casual game. You know, use that time to really think about where you're placing because you want to use that time to learn.
Right, and I'm not going to rush anybody or anything like that. Basically, it's when you got that person who every turn, and it was worse in 7th when every quarter of an inch counted, but you're sitting there and it's like, I've sat there with Harrison, especially, you know, Harrison's done it sometimes, and I know sometimes I play it too fast and loose. I will miss things, and I admit I will miss things, because I know kind of what I want to do, and I just throw it in there. And I'm like, you know, like I said, you got to bet heavy to win heavy, so I'm tossing it in there. And if you move it too quick, if you're doing stuff too quick, yes, you could mess it up. But if you're going to, you know, but it's one of those things where you also don't want to just sit and keep your opponent waiting while you're sitting there with your hand on your chin looking, going, okay, now he's here, and these there, maybe, you know, and then... And then you put down 10 spearmen off on. I'm gonna kick you in the teeth. But that's just me.
Well, I think we should probably sum this up.
Okay.
So it sounds like there are a couple of different like beginning strategies you can employ. Put down less important units because they don't give away anything.
Right.
Try one strategy that I suggested, and it may not be the best idea, but if you've got a powerful unit that you know you can count on, like the way Grant has with his Chaos Warriors, it doesn't give anything away to put them right in the middle of the table. If you know that you're going to be out-deployed, take advantage of that fact, it probably means that you're going to be able to go first. So set up knowing you'll probably get the turn you need to take. Or if you're going to be out-deploying your opponent, put as many useless items down as possible to force your opponent to put down those key units.
Right.
So you can react to that.
Yeah, well, yeah, then again, if you've got 8 units and he's got 4, you know, you try to save those last few things if you can, because he's going to get deployed, and then it's like, okay, now you're done.
now I get to fine-tune everything because I'm putting the rest of it exactly where I want it.
And see if you can employ some of Dave's psych-out strategies. Maybe spill a drink on the floor, yeah. And when they're going to clean it up, you can swap out their units.
I never did that!
No, but...
I never spilled a drink on the floor. Never once did I spill a drink on the floor, ladies and gentlemen. If I'm going to swap out Chris's units, I just swap them right in front of him. If I'm going to be cheating, I'm going to do it blatant.
That's right. This is Malekith. This is his friend Malekith. And over there is a unit of Malekith.
Yeah, you got to bet heavy to win heavy.
Yeah, keep saying it. Yeah, you keep saying it.
And it works.
So.
All right. Okay, God. We got it.
Let's wrap it up.
Done. Yeah. So, this was episode 7.
This has been fun.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Hey, guys, thanks for coming.
My pleasure.
Thanks for coming, hanging out in my messy basement with all our junk, and coming and recording a show with us. And hopefully we'll have you guys on again, especially when we talk about... we're going to start doing some Army book reviews eventually. And I know you guys each have your own little armies you love to play. We'd love to have you on to talk about them. You know what I mean. Yeah, but... that would be awesome. So, until next time... Blood Bowl rules.
Blood Bowl, yeah, we still have yet to play a game together. But
I've been playing it on the computer all week. So
you guys both play Blood Bowl, don't you?
I played the actual board game quite a few.
So games,
yeah, it's awesome.
It's a good time.
In amongst all of our other games, we'll have to play yet another.
All right. Well, the clock on the wall says that's it from the Stridex Medicated Pad Music Hour.
Awesome.
And. Hey, oh my God, it's midnight. So it is time for all the good girls and boys to go to bed. We're going to shut this down before somebody else writes me hate mail for us talking too much.
That wasn't hate mail.
No, it wasn't hate mail. That wasn't hate mail. All right, folks, see you guys in about 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening, guys. Tune in, and we'll talk to you soon.
Oh, hey, don't forget, give us a nice review on iTunes. We're on Twitter at GarageHammer. We're on Facebook at GarageHammer Podcast. Send us emails, garagehammer@live.com.
Join our active forum.
Stay in school. Don't drink and drive. And don't forget, unique gifts and games for all your gaming needs.
Ciao, guys. We'll see you next time.
Interjections, show excitement or emotion. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah.
That's the end.